Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello Egg Chasers, it's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, here with you every single Monday morning, 52 weeks of the year, even when there's hardly any rugby to talk about, as is the case this week. I'm in the Rugby Dungeon, I'm Tim with JB.
Hello Tim.
And with Phil.
Hello Tim.
How are we gents, you alright?
Alright actually.
You know, I didn't get the memo about wearing kind of simple buff gangster t-shirts.
Exactly. Well, I am buff and I am gangster, I guess. So,
that makes two of us.
You've been working all week, Tim. You've been on the radio.
Yes.
I know, because I've listened to every single minute. And can I just say, this week's radio has been, it's been some of the best radio I've ever heard. Ever. I think it's been absolutely excellent. Did you get around to reading my Rugby Pass articles?
I did read your Rugby Pass. I read this week's Rugby Pass article.
Thought you'd like that one.
Which was excellent. It was. I didn't not like the last one. I just didn't have time to read it.
Binned it. I will
read it, but it was really. No, it was good. It was the genesis of your article. It was nice because it sort of tracked from the podcast and you took it off in a wonderful new direction, suggesting a new domestic cup competition, which, bearing in mind the lack of cup rugby we've seen cross-border,
well,
there's even more argument for it, you could say.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote it because I was impressed with the Cardiff situation, how they manned up and got it done. But actually, it would be nice to have a functioning cup competition for this year, which isn't full of kids and isn't cancelled. And I think this weekend of all has really showed us that it would be nice to have a cup weekend that worked.
Yep.
Yeah, and when the big European weekends do work, you get some amazing rugby, amazing storylines, amazing history this weekend. It was tough to really get up for the fixtures when you knew half of them, more than half of them, weren't taking place, and there is currently no plans there are plans to reschedule, but there are no available dates to reschedule them.
Yeah, I feel so sorry for the organisers of the competition, because you can sometimes point to things in rugby and it is all our own fault. When I say it's our fault, the people who run the game, it is their fault. But it's rugby's fault. It's an internal rugby thing, incompetence or whatnot. You can't level those charges at the cancellation of the European Cup games, at the organisers of the UFC.
A big part of it was Emmanuel Macron and his government.
Yes.
What are you going to do? Threw a spanner into the works for four of the fixtures, or three of the fixtures.
So, you know, we've just got to be half aware that anything cross-border just might not happen because people are nuts.
And it's not just rugby, and it's not just cross-border. I mean, if you've watched Premier League football this, or tried to watch Premier League football this weekend, half the fixtures in the Premier League have gone out the window
You say that. It's not just it's not just nationwide. Locally, Didsbury had to cancel their game against Widnes, and I'll be the first one to apologise to witness for that, because I know how hard they've worked for it.
When you say they had to, what do you mean? Is that
positive tests? They had loads of positive tests.
Really?
Loads of positive tests.
What's going on with this? Because
who knows?
Anyway.
Yeah.
I'm speaking to lots of people that are getting positive tests and don't even have a sniffle. It's like, what is this? Anyway.
We've got a lot of lads that are allergic to microchips, so it does track.
Well, and also down the lower levels, Greater Manchester, or no, the RFU. I don't know whether this is on a local level or a national level. I believe the and if this is the case, then I will say this is one thing where I dislike rugby. I get it. The RFU cancelled all junior rugby.
Did they cancel it?
So yeah, so my son had like the big cup match that we've been building up to for about 6 weeks. They've had this date in their calendar. They were and they're absolutely gutted. They couldn't play today.
To be fair to the RFU, the way they handled the senior games this week, it must have been prevalent up and down the country, all these positive contests.
Yeah,
because by Thursday, they had a press release, or if it's a press release, I don't know, or a release of some description, saying that you can postpone your games for a COVID reason, and there is no penalty against it. So that's what a lot of teams have done. Now, whether it's all legitimate or not, I don't know.
Well, but, yeah, I mean...
I wanted to play this game on the weekend more
when
than
teams
anything.
Don't want to play a game, they always find a way
as some unnamed team.
As an unnamed team back in the day whose star tighthead was unavailable for a massive game. There was accidentally a burst pipe...
Right in the middle of the first team pitch.
Right in the middle of the first team pitch, a pipe burst and sprayed water everywhere.
Not
on
even
one
knew
of
that
the coldest nights
there.
Of the year, and the pitch froze and the game had to be postponed.
Yes, terrible things happen. Terrible, unlucky things happen every now and again.
Yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't just our witness game, Broughton Park cancelled. The massive. Well, actually, this is good news. Sedgley Tigers Huddersfield was cancelled.
Was it?
So we might actually go and watch that game.
Yes.
And actually, if we're lucky, because they're relatively close, they might even do it on a Thursday night or something.
Ooh, yeah, because it's only half an hour.
Yeah.
If there's no traffic.
That'd be awesome.
But I guess on a serious note, at the professional, at the top level, is these Champions Cup games are some of the biggest money spinners for these clubs. Hence, last weekend, Cardiff was so desperate to get the game on because they knew it'd be worth a few hundred grand to them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And at a time when rugby can ill afford any more spiralling costs, there are more. And I mean, I'm tempted to just say let the boys play, but I get it.
Yeah, I think we'll get over this pretty rapidly. My feeling is this is the beginning of the end. But I've said that since week four into it.
Yeah, April 2020.
That's the beginning of the end. I think this is beginning of the end.
I hope you're right.
I'm optimistic on this one.
I hope you're right, but we will see.
The beginning of the end of COVID and the start of the beginning of our new tyrannical regime, which will take over.
Well, yeah, I agree with the latter part of that. Get it on the whiteboard. Yeah, beginning of the end. Right on the whiteboard.
Yeah. I, for one, welcome our authoritarian overlords.
New technocratic authoritarian overlords.
I guess we could talk about some rugby. Ulster look good.
There's a bit of news to discuss.
Let's do the news.
Firstly, just say, if you haven't read JB's article on Rugby Pass, go and seek it out. It's very good. Mm.
The more people read it, the more I get paid, so that'd be really...
Right.
It should be. I mean, I can then lobby them, can't I, later.
Yeah, but then that makes... You can lobby them later, but that is why people write clickbait headlines and...
Rugby Pass has some really good articles. It also has some of the most clickbaity headlines.
Well, I think you'll find that my five reasons to reinstate club rugby is perfect.
Leicester beat Bordeaux with one weird trick.
If they want to get my custom, then it's just 13 amazing sets of quads.
Now you're talking.
Perfect.
Although that would be a rugby league team.
Yes, it would. Would it? Say Helms.
15.
I'm just plucking a number.
Yeah. 15.
Yeah. The best quad 15.
Yes.
Lots of photos. Click here. Yeah, I'm in. But there is a bit of news to talk about. So before we get into what rugby there was, let's just touch on some of the news. First one, Johan van Gran confirmed as leaving Munster at the end of the year. Bath appears to be the destination, although not confirmed.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I've seen a few things, and I don't know that much about Johan van Gran. I think he's very much liked over the water. Certainly outside of Munster, he's liked over the water. There's some disappointed Leinstermen, it seems, with Johan van Gran departing Munster.
Yeah, so it really highlights my lack of knowledge on anything else other than Premiership rugby, because I heard he was coming over. I thought, that sounds good. I think it sounds good.
Yeah.
Is it good? I assume it's going to be good. And then, like you said, lots of Leinster fans said, yeah... And it's awful to see him go.
Yeah, because he's led... Well, he's been there since Razzie departed, hasn't he? And been competitive, but won nothing, which for a proud club like Munster, and a proud club with so much talent as well, so much talent, like Ireland internationals, British and Irish Lions there, beyond obviously the huge depth of talent that they have unearthed over the last couple of weekends.
Yeah.
So, but the other side of it, so that's one side of it, that's the Munster and really the Leinster side of it. The other side of it from Bath's perspective. So I've read this, the Bath announcement, as Stuart Hooper stays in role as director of rugby, Johan van Grant comes in as a new head coach.
Yep.
Is that correct?
That is correct. I'm not entirely sure what happens to Neil Hattley.
Yeah, I think he said he's staying in role this year, but then whether he drops down to be a forwards coach or a defence coach, who knows?
I think it'd be better to clean house. I mean, so they've... It's not just Van Grant. They've also added Van Rensburg to the mix, who's a defence coach from South Africa.
And now he arrives almost immediately, doesn't he?
Yes, I think so. I mean, Hattley's very well regarded. I know that your brother likes him a lot, Tim.
Yeah, he does.
And yeah, I can say as well, you know, lads who played in Bath before, Cole Fern speaks about him incredibly highly. Hasn't really worked out as a head coach. And I do think he's had too much on his plate. I don't know. Something had to change. I think I would have got rid of Hooper before I got rid of Hattley. I don't know. I just feel like he's been dealt a bit of a bad hand, really. Because he was the experienced coach. And he had to do everything from... Well, he was a scrum coach. Then he had to take on defence. But as a head coach, you've also got to look at the overall game strategy. It's a lot of work for one man. And it's also... I don't think the blame lies there, necessarily. That's what I think.
Well, yeah. We'll wait and see what his role is, but he's not head coach, we know that much.
Yeah, I'm just reading the press announcement here. All it says is Neil Hattley will continue as head coach through to the end of the 2021 season, leading the coaching group. That's it. It says nothing more beyond the end of the season.
We don't know.
So he could stay, he could not stay.
And is this going to be a Mike Ford, Gary Gold situation with Johan van Grant and Stuart Hooper?
Yeah, well, maybe if Johan van Grant was working for... Oh, I see, yes, maybe. Oh, maybe, yeah. I think you've probably got a point there. However, let me divert you to an article written by Stuart Barnes today, where he absolutely hits the nail on the head. I couldn't have put it better myself. He basically gets a quote from Stuart Hooper. I'll just read the entire paragraph. This is what Hooper said on the appointment of Hattley as head coach. Bringing Neil back into our environment.
Neil Hattley.
What did I just say?
Neil back.
Sorry.
Oops. Neil back, listener of the podcast. Yeah, hi, Neil.
This is what Hooper said on the appointment of Neil Hattley as head coach. Bringing Neil back into our environment was about...
What did I just say? Neil Hattley.
Neil, bringing Neil back into our...
Ah! Oh! That's insane. Then.
Bringing Neil Hattley back into
yes,
our
right. Let me start again.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Oh God!
Language is important.
Yes, it is. This is what Hooper said on the appointment of Hattley as head coach. Bringing Neil Hattley back into our environment was about reconnecting, finding out how I can complement him, how he can complement me, and how we can deliver the best programme here at the club. God knows what this typical management speak was supposed to mean. Absolutely right.
Has he been reading your Twitter feed for the last few months and gone, I think JB might be on something?
Yeah, no. Yes, almost certainly. But B, I think anyone can see this. It is a nonsense.
Even if you don't watch the way they play and you don't understand the talent that they've got in their squad and how poorly it's performing at the moment, just look at the results. Yeah. They're so bad. They are so bad.
Yeah, it's shocking, actually. The other thing he's got on his plate, Van Graan, is keeping Anthony Watson in place, which kind of is quite an exciting prospect, really, because I guess we'll move on to this with Genge. But I think this is going to be the future of transfers. Only the big names can move. That's how I can see it going. Because
all the very small names.
Yeah, but for pennies.
Yeah, pennies. But they will do. The squeezed middle is reality in rugby now, and it's been exacerbated by the £2 million reduction in the salary cap.
Yeah.
So you have a handful of stars, and it is a handful in the whole league who are on £500,000 plus. You've then got a few players and probably a handful of internationals who are on the good six figures 200, 300k, and then most people will be on, well, lower than 100k.
I'd say so.
It's still good money. It's a very short career. You're in very a very demanding. Very demanding, very high risk environment. Your career could be over next week.
And short term.
Yeah, short term. But for those guys, if you're on, I don't know, if you're on 60k, another 10k is all it would take to make you move.
Yeah, I was talking to a CEO about this, and he was saying that in his mind that it was 40k that would make them move. But that was in the days when the average, that was a few years after, do you remember the quote from Malander saying, I need to pay, who was it, Ben Nuttall?
Ben Nuttall was a flanker.
The flanker, yeah.
I can't believe I've got to pay over 100k for Ben Nuttall. that always took me. So, you know, when the average salary went up somewhere between 120 to 140, that CEO was like, well, hometown discount, it sometimes takes about 40k before they can move. And once you hit that 40k, that's when you think that you'll lose that player.
Well, Rob Baxter was speaking this week and said that the penny is only just beginning to drop with the players. What this all means, what the 1.4 million reduction of a 6.4 million total and one removal of a marquee player. So it's probably near a... it's basically going from 7 million to 5 million, which is a massive drop.
It's brutal.
Mm. That is huge.
And I suspect one thing that's also happened in this would be historic, and this has happened before the reduction, but it's a long-term trend, that historically, say 10 years ago, you probably had something close to a normal distribution of salaries,
yeah,
with a few people at the bottom end, 50k and below, a few people at the top end, 500k and above, and then everyone else normally, like a bell-shaped curve, in between those two points. Now, you probably have those few people at the top end, and then everyone else is right down at the bottom end.
Yeah.
So the bell-shaped curve is now skewed over to the left-hand side. So even though the...
With a fat tail?
Fat tail, yes. Even though the mean will remain the same, the median and mode will have shifted to the left towards zero.
The consequence of that, right, I think, is... And this sounds a ridiculous thing to say, I'll explain myself. I think the Nigel Ray approach is the way to go. And by that, I don't mean... South African farmland buildings, all the rest of it.
Commercial rights probably is a way to go if you're an owner.
That's one way. But what I mean by that is, tell these young lads, we're going to give you more than just a salary. We're going to set you up with expertise, support, help.
Training, education
for what's going to be beyond.
Well, you know, this is, you're absolutely right. This is what's going to be important. So I think clubs are going to start behaving like NFL teams in terms of really successful NFL teams generally try and build through their draft because they get lads in, and once they're in...
Not if you're New York Jets, you just continue to burn the house down through the draft.
Yes, exactly right. I mean, you can also get it horrifically wrong too. But, you know, if you think about it, your academy. I know we do this game all the time where you say, oh, what, they, you know, look at all the lads that they let go in their academy, or look at all the lads that have moved away from their academy. Well, that's not going to be as easy to do now to take lads away from academies. Mm-hmm. So I think the most successful teams will blood lads through their academy and they'll keep them, because one of the more valuable things will be making sure that they stay in the local area, they've got access to family, support networks, things which, you know, you might move away from if you were earning 250k a year.
But also, the other thing is, Harlequins, Saracens, London Irish, and other clubs have got a much harder job to make suddenly that smaller amount of money in West London versus Manchester or Newcastle,
Worcester.
Yeah. Worcester. It's
by a nice place in the Cotswolds.
Exactly. When you get to an age where, and rugby players tend to have children younger,
mm-hmm,
when you get to an age where you actually sort of think, I might want to start a family, I might want to, you know, buy the family house I'm going to be in beyond rugby, then the other decisions come into play, and yeah, West London's not a great place to be.
No, it's not. I honestly think...
Well, no, it's a great place to be.
Yeah, there's positives.
Not when you're on 60K.
Yeah, you don't get much in West London.
Yeah.
You really don't, do you?
No.
Yeah, I think only the biggest names will be moving. The Genges, the Fords... Genges and Fords, really. Watsons, because of, you know, the big name value to that club of having that player walk through the door. And they can't even move to be marquee guys, which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, Watson will be an interesting one to see what he does, because he's a bit like a Manu situation where he's so talented, but Bath haven't seen the best of his talents for years. Yeah, probably back to 2015 maybe even. Yeah. In the same way that Leicester for years and years and years were paying all of this money for such an impressive weapon who you couldn't use. And Manu is arguably worse because Manu is so unique that there's no one like him. There's very few. There's a handful of players like him in the whole entire world as good as Manu at doing what he does. So you have to build your structure around what he can do. And then when he disappears, no one... He is irreplaceable.
Yep.
Certainly within Leicester's squad, he was irreplaceable. So Bath have got a very tough decision with Anthony Watson.
Well, they can only offer him what they can offer him, effectively. They can't... Well, they, you know, there's no marquee to give him.
They could give him marquee. Bath could. But I'd say they shouldn't.
Yes.
But they could do. They could offer him £5 million a year if they wanted to.
There would be no way on earth I would ever pay a winger with the marquee spot. I'd sooner die than pay a winger with the marquee spot. Like, I am absolutely 100% certain now that the only way to use your marquee is on props or second rows. And then furthermore, anyone...
Fly half as well.
I don't think so, you know. Because...
Paddy Jackson at Marcus, London Irish.
Like Marcus
Smith.
Paddy Jackson at London Irish, Marcus Smith at Quinns, George Ford at Leicester. Like, those three players are absolutely instrumental to their teams.
That is true. Would you give a marquee spot to Owen Farrell?
Yeah, probably.
Would you give a marquee...
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah,
would you give a marquee spot to, if you needed him, Lazowski?
Probably not to Lazowski.
What about Sexton?
Sexton 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yes.
100% yes.
Yeah. So, Bowden Barrett. Yes. Barrett. Yes, I would. Yeah. Richie Moonga. Yeah. Yes, I would.
Okay. So I guess the point I'm trying to make here by naming all these
Untermack.
Yeah. Yes, Untermack. 100%.
So I guess the point I'm trying to make here by naming these people is there's loads of them. They're everywhere, and generally speaking, each team only needs one of them, and then you can go to people like, you know, Freddie Burns, or, you know, at Worcester they're doing all right with. Well, all right, they're doing rubbish, actually, aren't they? But they've got Smith, and then they've got Williams. I think you'd probably get away with it and focus on just getting an enormous pack. And then if you've got a bit of money left over, yeah, he, being the 10, should get a little bit more than, say, the centres, but not a tremendous amount.
You say there's loads. You have just named the top best 10 best fly halves in the world.
That is true.
Which are, by definition, best fly halves in the world.
Andre Pollard as well will be the marquee player.
Yeah.
Yes.
What about Simmons at Exeter?
Interesting one. So he's not the marquee player.
Mm-hmm.
I probably wouldn't. Not with Simmons.
And if he's not as good as Harvey Skinner, which is what I think is happening there, I don't think I'd give it to Harvey Skinner or Brett Cadden or Will Hayden Wood.
Well, let's jump and talk about Ellis Genz then. What do you make of that move?
Bizarre, really. I mean, I'm not going to... Yeah, bizarre. I don't think it works on any level for anyone, except for maybe.
What's Ellis Genz going home?
Going home, yes.
Going back to Bristol,
young child.
So he's not actually going for any more money, I don't think.
Well, Pat Lammers said he's taking a pay cut.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Now, whether that's a pay cut to his current salary or his previous salary, whether Ellis Genz said, "Oh yeah, I'm on 800k," and so he's negotiated 600k.
Well done, brilliant.
Take it with a pinch of salt, but...
Does it... I mean, yes, okay. If you're going to spend your money, spend it on props. I'm fine with that. I don't believe Ellis Genz has proved himself to be a world-class prop yet, actually. He's a very good prop. He's a good premiership prop, good carrier. World-class prop, not so much. He's not as good as a Kitsoff or...
Well, so I think...
Something like that.
I think he's probably... Well, he's not as good a scrimmager as a Kitsoff. What he adds is he is probably the best... He's the best carrying prop in the Premiership.
Decent.
He's as good as most back rows as a carrier.
Is he a heavy carrier, though?
Yeah. So he does the...
Yeah.
He's such a good...
No, he just is. 100%. He's destructive.
I saw some... I can't remember where they were. There were some graphs plotting players by position. This was at the start of the season. Players by position in terms of like various attributes. And carrying was one of them. And Genz was, if you had the X and Y axis, Genz was like, most of the dots of players were in the middle.
Yeah.
Genz was off the chart,
Like against meters made, was it?
His meters made and defenders beaten, I think, were the two stats as a front rower.
Think of Ellis Genge as abnormally out in open space for a prop. And I don't know if he's out abnormally out in open space for a prop because he's made the space for himself or because he does things differently to its, to other guys. I don't know.
It's probably a bit of both because he can carry like that. He's used like that. Well, so you got to use your best guys in the most effective way. And they do that.
At Sale Sharks, there is a passage of play which ended up with Ellis Genge in acres of space, and he was going to be running at, in acres of space this would be, one of the guys, and it could have been, I want to say it was Solomona. I would be generally interested to say like which way this is going to go. Like, is Ellis Genge going to go through him? Is he going to go around him? It's quite
step
possible.
Him.
Yeah, quite possible.
Let's talk about the manner of the announcement, because this seems to have got most of the attention since Ellis Genge's announcement. Actually, firstly, the video of Ellis Genge, the little teaser video where Bristol just posted a picture of, as it turned out to be, Ellis Genge's feet. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, the tattoos.
The tattoos on Ellis Genge's feet are remarkable.
Are they?
What? Yeah, I'll just get it up and I'll show you. Where is it? Here we go. Where's the picture? There we go. Yeah, Bristol Bears. A tweet from them said, special delivery, all eyes, 4:30 p.m. Just have a look at that. He's got Noel West written across his toes.
Why?
On the knuckles of his toes. That's where he's from. He's got a bagpipe.
Do you not have Colwyn Bay written across your toes?
Would that fit? Col Wynbay. Oh, you can have an exclamation mark at the end as well.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Or chop one of your toes off.
Yeah.
You choose.
Are those my only two?
That's
if
it.
If you chop the one off that's between the N of Colwyn and the B of Bay, yeah, that'd look great.
Yeah. And apparently little toes are... No, is it big toes that are very important?
But yeah. I think both are. I think big toes are really important. Yeah, but little toes, your balance is... Big toes, you're totally screwed. Little toes, deceptively, I think, are... Ooh, it totally throws you out.
Look, he's got a set of bagpipes tattooed on his foot.
Horrendous feet.
He's got... I don't know what... I can't see what that says. Is it... It looks like it's written MAGA Baby.
Yeah, it does look like MAGA Baby.
Wow.
Make MAGA America Baby. great again.
MAGA Baby. Or is it Mega Baby?
Let's say MAGA. It does look like MAGA.
It could be MAGA.
That's shocking.
It looks like a springbok or something on the left-hand side.
Yeah. And then it's got XXXTJLMLL.
Uh-huh. It just shows you shouldn't try and save money on tattoo artists.
You definitely shouldn't.
But anyway, other than that, he also posted a video once the announcement was made, or rather, Bristol Bears, or as they will be known next season, the Bristol Baby Rhinos, posted a video of Ellis Genge in Bristol stash.
Oh, so he's not actually in Bristol. I've just got it here.
Oh, is he not?
He's got Umbro kit on.
Oh, he's got Umbro
kit. But there's no Bristol logos on it.
But he's branded, right?
Yeah, he's branded.
He's been deliberately branded in Umbro.
He's Umbro.
He's in Umbro kit at the Bristol training ground, hugging his director of rugby for next season, Pat Lamb.
Oh, because Pat Lamb's all about love. Have you not heard?
And, yeah. Because Leicester fans are not happy about that at all.
I think you've got to be a little careful here about going down the rugby values thing. So, on one hand, I'm absolutely outraged that he's done this. Absolutely outraged. But on the other hand, what would I say if, for instance... Well, what I say about other things, which is rugby needs to create some storylines, a bit of heat, a bit of drama. I'd quite like to see a bit more smack-talking. And this is quite smack-talky.
Very smack-talky. Yeah.
Well, he's not talking down Leicester.
Well, I don't think Leicester would say it like that.
I see it as a bit disrespectful because... So, it's in the middle of the season.
The club captain.
He is the club captain.
Yeah.
He's one of their absolute best players, one of their most important players. And so, I've got no problem at all with him leaving Leicester. He should do whatever is right for him, his family and his bank balance. Yeah. That is above everything.
Not necessarily in that order either.
Bank balance first.
Yeah, yeah. Him and then family.
Yeah, bank balance first. Him, family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. What does it do for your pension, Ellis? that's the real question. But this just seems a little bit crass. And I don't actually... I think Bristol Bears... I think they pushed him to do this. They're right to push him to do this because it's great for them.
He's clearly is consensual.
Yes.
He hasn't said no, I'm not.
Well, we don't know that, do we? We don't know that.
Well, and this is where it is clearly consensual. It's just, I think he's ill-advised or he's not considered it properly when you look at it through the Leicester lens with him being club captain and coming up to play Bristol this weekend.
Amazing. And listen, who hasn't made an error in judgment at any point? Yeah. And I think Ellis Genge even acknowledged that. He said, do you know what? That was an error. I didn't consider it, the timing of it.
How? But, I'm sorry, what about his agent? Did he consider the timing of it?
Well, yeah. I mean,
did anyone else? The thing is, everything has like an equal and opposite reaction sort of thing, doesn't it? So, yes, it's...
I'm surprised Pat Lamb didn't go, listen, Ellis, I love you too much to let you do this. You need to...
Exactly. Where was the love? Where was the love?
I'm joking. I'm not that bothered by it. I can understand why Leicester fans are.
Yeah. But equally, I understand why Bristol fans would be excited.
Absolutely, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it goes both ways. He's feathering his nest for his future employers.
Oh, well, let's have a look at the fixtures for Boxing Day. Oh, Bristol versus Leicester.
I don't know what you do about this. Do you, as Leicester, just pretend this never happened? Just don't mention it.
Well, I bet you Ellis Genge stood up in front of the team straight away in a team meeting and just said, I'm sorry, boys, I ballsed up. Because the players understand the reality. They're there. They're all negotiating contracts and some of them are moving. This is it. This is the way rugby is. It's him going to Bristol is not the story. Exactly you say. It's just an ill-advised video which he will have just held his hands up and said,
I tell you what is the story. Every time I listen to Ellis Genge talk, I'm always impressed. I'm always impressed by his acumen, like how switched on he is about stuff. He does not suffer fools at all. And in fact, he does his
I was that fool trying to ask him questions on the first game as captain. He didn't answer anything.
I'm sure sometimes he likes to play the card like, oh yeah, I'm just this working class kid. And then all of a sudden hit them with, actually, I've understood everything which you've said and you've underestimated me and now I'm going to take you to the cleaners.
Yep.
I'm sure he does that pretty much all of the time,
actually. Yeah, he's a smart guy.
Yeah. How long is he going to put up with love on the wall? And, you know, all the controlling nonsense that goes on at Bristol. I can't see it's been a good fit. I really
He's pulling on his hometown jersey. He loves Bristol. He talks about it all the time. He didn't want to leave.
No.
He was in a position where he had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And now he gets to come back home, and he's coming back home an England international and going to be one of their most important players.
Now, Pat Lamb does not like it when people stand up to him. He just is not interested. And I think Ellis Genge will stand up to him if he is not liking where the direction of the club or the team is going.
Created, there's a whole number of hypotheticals you've just created to build up a fight which hasn't happened.
I guarantee you that... This is not going to be a good move for either party.
Well, the bad side of it, the worst side of it, is obviously Bristol getting a great player, but another enormous chunk of their salary cap has just vanished.
Yeah.
Disappeared.
I wonder if this is John Arfoa's money.
Potentially.
So John Arfoa going as a coach might free up some...
I need to keep this anonymous, as they've asked, but one of our listeners is quite well connected. Not anyone involved directly with any club, I have to say. Just one of our listeners who happens to know a couple of people got in touch and said on the 16th of December, when they got in touch, they said, Ellis Genge, definitely come in. And also, what I understand is they're going to be bringing in a Pacific Island number 8 to replace Hughes. And I was trying to think who that might be.
Bill Matter.
That would be a handy signing.
And a 12.
And a 12? How are they squeezing all these guys in?
Goodness knows. Needs more guys that he's going to pay peanuts to.
Well, or 24 or more guys on the way out. So
There's going to have to be. They can't not
Sheedy
be.
Sheedy has to be on the way out, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't fit. Not EPQ. Wales won't play him if he has to sign a new contract. And they've got McGinty coming in. So I guess he'd be...
Yeah, that's for another day, I guess. It's just there is, I think, going to be a lot more change. And I think going back to what Rob Baxter said and what you've already talked about on this podcast, it will be dawning on players, if it hasn't already, the landscape. It's not just a slight shift. It is a complete alteration in their expectations and their plans. And that's going to be a really difficult adjustment for a lot of guys, particularly people that are already inside the system. If I was a parent of a...
of a really promising 16-year-old rugby player, I would be making sure my son had a thought about all sorts of other options and was spinning another plate at the same time as rugby, because
unless
you're right at the top, it's going to be tough.
So I had a really interesting conversation with a guy on Friday about rugby pathways. Mm. And it got my back up a little bit, because it dovetailed into a previous conversation I had with someone who used to run a club. And what they were saying is, when we get rugby players into the academies, we need to, as almost like, to make it mandatory. And I'm not saying you said this, Tim, but they have another form of education, or in higher education or further education, as a rugby player. And I really hate that, because
it shouldn't be forced on people.
Yeah, but this was I think this is an NRL solution, which is the lads need to be doing something else other than rugby. And you could make the argument that it makes them more well-rounded, but for some lads, all they want to do is be a rugby player. And I think we all very, and I'm in this camp, I would say, like you, if I had a son playing in a club, I'd say you have to have something else to fall back on.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, to make it in professional sport, you've got to be so single-minded.
You're right.
You don't want to sort of divert that single-mindedness or that attention away from the sport. So I don't know what the answer is. I certainly don't like anyone telling players they have to do something.
Yeah. Mandated seems overkill.
Yeah.
There should be, in my view, a very strong recommendation that you should do. And not everyone should be out studying for a degree. In fact, far fewer people who probably have degrees should have them. Get a trade. Get something that you can fall back on. Get something that will just teach you about the world.
Or at least consider. Just at all times, imagine, what would I do if?
Yeah. I think what got me onto this was they were talking about a draft after playing university rugby, which almost means you've got to go to university to get into a sport.
So that's like, following the American system.
Yeah, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Just play whatever sport that you want to that you want to play. And look, if you do find yourself in the afternoons, you know, going for coffee with the boys and playing pool, then do something else.
Yeah.
If you find yourself, studying video of your next opponent, or going to the gym, or doing extra bits and pieces, well, forget the other thing. Just really do 110% of being a professional rugby player.
If you want to just spend every night on Twitter slaying it because you're young and fit, that's fine as well.
It's a hobby.
If you've got access to the the Worcester Academy House's ultra-fast Wi-Fi.
Yeah, several devices on at one go.
But really, actually, you should be mining Bitcoin if you're in the in the Ulster Academy House.
That's a great shout.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how they afforded Dimes on board. They're paying him in Bitcoin that they've been mining all these years.
It'd be a lot of Bitcoin to afford Dimes. My word. Hand over fist.
That's the news, right?
I think we've covered off everything.
I guess the bit of news looking at the rugby this week, before we get into the actual substantive part of the games, is how would you feel if you were a Leinster fan right now? Because there are some games which have been postponed, and there are some games which have been declared walkovers. The ones that before Friday were cancelled because of positive cases in certain camps, for example, Leinster have been defeated, and Racing have been awarded a win. I forget who the teams are playing now.
Yeah,
the games didn't actually happen.
Leinster, Montpellier was a walkover. Ospreys were given 0 points against Racing. But then there was the Saracens game, I think, was fully postponed, which was the other one. And then everything after France closed their borders, Macron closed their borders, has been given as a postponed fixture. So there's a timing issue which creates a difference in approach.
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
Confusing. How aggrieved would you feel if you were Leinster?
Pretty furious.
I'm saying Leinster because Ospreys as well. However, they're going away to Racing.
I think Leinster were missing players, but they could still. Leinster have got so much talent and so much depth in every position that they could be missing first 15. Yeah. And they would still put up a very good fight against Montpellier. And
whoever ends up getting Leinster in the knockout stages, because they won't be one of the top seeds now, potentially, will also be cursing this.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
And like last year's European Cup had all sorts of mismatches in. Like Sale Sharks got to the quarters, did they?
Yeah, lost to La Rochelle.
It was quarters or semis. Yeah, it was quarters.
Quarters, yeah.
Weren't emotional enough.
Yeah, well, yeah. Emotional effort. But you know, it's been in reality, was that Sale Sharks team good enough to play?
They didn't win a game; they got through on bonus points alone.
Yeah, and that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. Yeah. So it's no wonder they lost on emotion when they got there. it will throw up some really big mismatches. I don't think you'll see the good games then until the semi-finals when everything sort of weeds itself out. Mm. But if you get a team like Leinster who are not in because of these reasons, they've got every right to be aggrieved because, let's face it, they almost certainly would have made it in.
Mm.
And then the viewer isn't seeing the best possible game. They're just seeing, you know, whatever COVID has dealt us.
But equally, there are, once a game is cancelled, there are no fixtures, really. There's no available weekends to do it properly.
Nope.
So we've now got these postponed fixtures, which who knows when these are going to take place, yeah. And with what state the teams are going to be in, because they might have to happen during Six Nations. Yeah. That might be the only available weekend.
Wow. And let's not forget, rounds 3 and 4 of the pool stages are the second and third weekends in January. So it's only a month away, less than a month away.
And then you're back. You have the Six Nations, February, March, and then 2 weeks after that, you're into the knockout stages.
The last 16. So,
it's a very difficult one. I really hope they square.
Don't. I mean, I was going to say, I really hope they don't pull the plug on it. That's purely from a selfish point of view. I want the work.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Absolutely.
But for rugby, it's.
I mentioned Premier League before. Premier League, you can play 4 fixtures in 8 days, Premier League football. You cannot do that with rugby.
But
you just can't.
They did double up on fixtures, didn't they? With the COVID catch-up stuff, which did show that rugby had...
Midweek rugby was awesome.
Yeah.
Phil Dolman, absolutely dominating Semi Randrandra.
Exactly.
Naturally.
Exactly. So, here, let's have a break from the rugby for 1 minute. I'm going to give you my phone, Tim, and you're going to read these messages I received on Twitter.
Is this a good idea?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
I'm not on Twitter, so I haven't seen
this.
No,
you're going to read these.
Should I be scared?
You're going to read them. Yeah. Do not mention the name. It's very important you do not mention the name.
Okay. So this is a message you
received from me, DM.
Oh, a DM.
DM, yeah.
Someone slid into your DMs.
So slid into my DMs. Please do not mention.
Okay. Hello, sir. Random, but genuine. Question. Hold on.
Just read it.
Hello, sir. Random, but genuine question. But would you be willing to sell some used rugby socks? Oh, my God. Thank you. For what reason, is the reply. I'm a foot sub who worships... This is a joke.
I do wonder if it's one of your Twitter beefs who is...
No idea.
This is. I'm wondering whether JB's just got someone fabricated a Twitter account just to be able to say
JB's burner account to boost his ego.
Says, for what reason? I'm a foot sub who worships alpha males like yourself, so I was wondering if it would be a possibility.
Now, at this point, Flattery will get you everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. I'm in. At this point, I'm in.
Sure. 250. I assume that means pounds rather than I have 250 pairs of socks.
Oh, I've been waiting for someone to ask me this.
We'll send them after the game Saturday. Thank you, sir. That is very generous. I wouldn't be able to afford that, though. Would there be any movement on that? Thank you.
Now he's negotiating me down.
150. Sorry for the delay, sir. I went out last night. I normally pay max £50.
Do I send him socks for socks £50?
I don't know if that's reasonable in your books, but I would be very grateful for the opportunity. Hope you have a good day, sir. Sir, the deference.
Well, I'm an alpha male, mate. So, I mean, it clearly states that in the message. So, you know, it makes sense.
You haven't replied to his offer of £50.
Well, I'm worried now. I'm really worried that he's going to negotiate me down to too much. And in the end, I'm going to end up giving him socks for free and going around to pleasure him twice because he wins the negotiation. And I'm not very good at negotiating. I need to negotiate him back up, don't I, really?
I am thinking this... right, because there was the joke for a long time on our YouTube channel where JB would forget to wear socks. And me and Phil would say, you're going to skew up our algorithm and we'll get... Maybe that's what's happened. Someone has stumbled across our YouTube videos
because
you messed up the algorithm on the feet.
Yeah.
We're massive in the foot fetish community.
It's really worrying, actually, because I'm just thinking now, like, if this sideline of mine takes off and I can, you know, sell dirty rugby socks for £50 a go, I mean, I only play one game a week, so I'm going to have to really up, like, where do I find my games? I'll have to be doing midweek games.
Training. Two training sessions.
But is that legitimate, though? I mean, do you want training socks or do you want game socks?
Training socks, for me, personally. Yeah.
Training socks that you've worn for three consecutive training sessions without washing them.
Equals one game sock.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a lot of rugby games.
Yeah, two training socks plus game socks. But then CrossFit socks, they must get pretty sweaty.
Yeah, that is true. Also, I could potentially run a, you know, buying socks off other rugby players, and then
buy low and sell high.
Yeah.
Buy them for £20 off your teammates and sell them for £50.
Exactly. Well, but by the time I replace the team socks, andals. Yeah,
this reminds me of something. So there's a woman I saw a story about the other day who sells something for $1,000 a pop.
Oh wow! What
Wait, and I'll
ooh.
Let me find the clip. Where's the video? Come on. Oh, it's been broken or removed. Oh, the link's been broken. Oh, I was going to play you a clip. I'm just going to find her name, see if I can find it. Keep talking.
All right. As long as the economics work.
Well, that's where I'm going on this. So at the moment, goods are worth what people are willing to pay for it.
Exactly.
You have one piece of data that someone is willing to pay £50 for your socks, but you need more data. So the only logical conclusion is you need to start an OnlyFans account.
Yes, go on.
Selling socks.
Yes.
And find out your market rate.
That's a great idea.
And then...
But the problem is, if other now we've publicised it, more people are going to get into the sock market, driving down my price.
Well, but there are so few alpha males like your good self.
That is true.
Yeah. Right, have a listen to this.
Hey guys, today I'm going to be showing you a day in the life of a girl who sells her farts in a jar.
No way.
No.
Yep.
That is disgusting.
What?
She does, and she went on to say, first I eat beans.
Jesus Christ.
And I have a protein muffin, and then I get to work.
Oh Jesus, my God. Foul.
Oh my
People
God.
People are so disgusting, aren't they? Anyway. Not my clients, of course. That is completely normal.
Damn it! There you go. We've got a new Patreon tier. Patreon.com/eggchasers. I mean, we'll have to come up with a name for that one. We've got our Negroni tier.
Yeah,
we'll have to come up with a whole new foot-related tier.
Yeah,
crikey,
we'll work on that. The games. How long have we been talking for now?
Nearly 50 minutes.
Well, there was only three games. Four games.
Five, wasn't there? Four Champions Cup.
There's only one today.
Ulster, Quins, Exeter, Leicester.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So I guess I think the Leicester game was a genuinely high-quality game, actually. It just shows Leicester will never, ever lose another rugby game.
Oh, no chance.
Yeah. They've forgotten how to lose, as people think it is.
I thought this would be hard for them.
Fair play, Connacht.
And it was. Oh, Connacht are a good side.
Handy team.
Yeah.
I think that Leicester are very, very proficient. I'm not sure if they're that extra level of quality. You know, like Saracens when they kick into that extra high gear. I don't think that they've got that yet, despite beating Saracens, I might add.
Yeah, they had a weakened team this week. They fielded a weakened team this week.
Yeah, they did.
I think they did kick into an extra gear this week. Around the 45 to 50 minute mark, when they changed their front row, and they had that extended period of time camped on Connacht's line, scrum after scrum, penalty.
Off. Is this you, Tim? That's literally just appeared in my DM.
Get out of it. We're not broadcasting live
anymore,
are we?
No, we're not broadcasting live.
Literally, a message has just arrived in your DMs that says, your feet are so 4-0s. So sexy in your podcast. What's going on?
Have we been
that is a completely random account joined.
Is this like, well, no, Jeremy Beadle's not about anymore, but is there like a Beadle person doing a Beadle's about
that
on
us? What? That is really creepy. That's literally just popped up now.
Apologies.
That is,
I'm going to do my Nick Mullins at this point as well. Apologies for the language.
Yes.
That is a bit weird. You said your phone was going sentient the other week. Do you think your phone
You've got a new phone as well, haven't you?
Google's Pixel.
Don't trust Google.
Skynet. I'm just going to put that there and just not
Can you
anymore.
Can you turn your phone off, please, GB?
It's listening to everything we're saying.
It's quite... There we go.
That's evil,
isn't it? Anyway, as I was saying, there was a bit of a step change in Leicester's performance this week when they changed their front row. Dan Cole comes on, and they had that 10... It felt like a 10-minute period from about 50 minutes to 60 minutes where they were camped on Connacht's line. It was scrum after scrum. It was scrum penalty after scrum penalty. Eventually forced the Finlay Beelum yellow card, and then eventually forced... Well, I think it was the... Hosea Somaki...
Steward and Somaki.
And the steward, yeah, the Freddie Steward tries, which all came from that period of extensive scrum dominance. That was the shift that they had. But they didn't play that well, I didn't think, overall. I thought Connacht played pretty well. They took the chances by forcing errors, their two tries. They kicked intelligently and pinned Leicester back. But it always felt like Leicester were going to win, even though it was a weakened Leicester team. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Connacht went in at the half on the up.
Massive, though. Yeah, the Jack Carty intercept.
And also Jack Carty landing the drop goal. Probably is going to be a really crucial bonus one, because they've already won one against...
Stad,
yeah.
Big win.
So I think they're looking pretty sharp to get into the knockouts, I would say.
Yeah, and Leicester, obviously, they've played 2-1-2. They're on 9 points, same as Munster and Quinns in their half of the table. And the other half of the table... Top team is Racing, who obviously beat Northampton comfortably, but then have got a home walkover against Ospreys this week. They're on 10 points. Then my boys Ulster, second place on 9.
Yeah, let's talk about Ulster. Looking good.
Yeah, they've... Are you bought into the idea that Mike Lowry is the Northern Hemisphere's Chas and Colby?
Do you always want to say...
Yes. The answer is yes, the next question.
But do you always want to say his name like Bad Boys?
Yes, exactly.
Mike Lowry.
Yes, 100%.
I don't think
so either. The only similarity is they're both small.
What's the last player you can remember that is as small and as small as Mike Lowry?
I know one. Played at Bristol.
Wasn't a scrum half.
Who's not
he's
a scrum
like Harry
half.
Because he's like Harry Randall small.
Yeah, what is his name? He played in the World Cup for Wales. He's fullback. Played for Bristol. And Cardiff. And I think Matthew Morgan.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
That is a good shout.
That's the only one I can really think of. Palam. Ryan Lamb was a very small guy. But never
I think he's probably bigger than Mike Lowry.
Halfbacks can fly half and scrum half can quite often avoid a lot of the big contact. Mike Lowry just gets stuck in. You have to make those big tackles at covering, and you're quite often exposed catching a kick with, you know, a kick chase bearing down on you.
And he's a good example of why you just give lads a chance and see what they can do. Mm. Because if you select rugby players in a tick box style exercise, like, are you big enough or you're not big enough, you'd miss him out completely. And he is, I don't want to say he's unique, he's rare.
Yeah.
And I think that rareness gives him a real advantage, because you don't really know what to do with him. And his kicking's great. Like his tactical kicking. Was it this week he got a 50-20?
Yeah, he did. He got 50-22.
Oh, he's very, very good player. His offloading's nice. He just does a lot of good things. Not sure he's an international, though. I mean, he might end up an international because Ireland have got nowhere else to turn, and they do find themselves in that situation because of a relatively shallow player pool.
But, yeah. Well, he's actually probably, if you look in the international scene, he's probably not far off someone like Jordan Lama, who'd be a similar stature, similar type player.
That's a good shout.
Perhaps Mike Lowry maybe a little bit more kicking and distributing. Jordan Lama a bit more...
Very Ian Whitney, isn't he?
Who?
Lowry. Similar size.
Definitely not very Tom Hendrickson.
Yeah, the opposite Tom Hendrickson.
Well, he's closer in size to Hendrickson than he is to Whitten, I guess.
Anyway,
Ulster are a legit team. Dan McFarland is one of my favourite DORs in rugby. I really like the cut of his jib.
I liked Hume as well. I thought Hume was a lovely player.
Hume is class. He had a good game this week. I think he had a better game last week. He has been playing at some level for some time.
Where's he in the pecking order?
For Ireland,
how many injuries would need to happen for him to be starting?
Maybe. No. So Ringrose would have the outside berth. Then probably if he goes down, Henshaw might get moved out if Henshaw's fit. Farrell has played there. Farrell and Hume are different players, though.
Aren't they?
Farrell is massive.
Farah's a monster.
Farah's an absolute monster. He's absolutely enormous. I think Hume would be ahead of Farrell in the pecking order.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Although, because you've got Farrell selecting Farrell, there's some bias there. But this was... So, Ulster, his great first 20 minutes. Amazing first 2 minutes. To kick off, get the ball back, and 15 phases later, the lovely little inside pass from Billy Burns to Robbie Herring, who ran a great line, finished that try beautifully. That... great start to the game. Then it was a bit more of an arm wrestle, but Ulster, they got a little bit lucky with the two tries. So Nathan McElroy scored a superb try with a little chip over the top, takes it, steps, Skosen, and then goes in ahead of Slightholm. Slightholm was catching him. That was a great try. The other two tries, I feel, were a little bit lucky. The cross field kick to Gilroy, where RC Tuala just, no one around him, he just misses the ball and it bounces up to Gilroy to tap it down. And then I think the Mitchell yellow card on penalty try was a little bit unlucky. I think it was a deliberate knock on by the definition of the law, because he was not in a position to catch the ball. His hands go down. I don't think he deliberately slapped it down, but his hand went down to hit the ball. I think then Furbank was coming across. So I think it was a little bit lucky for Ulster to get both the yellow card and the penalty try. But for four try bonus point, I'll take it.
Yeah.
And I also think that the Skosan try... Is it the Skosan try? No, the Mitchell try against Ulster was a little bit lucky, because there was definitely crossing. And even though there was no contact with John Cooney, who was defending that line... He was totally wrong-footed as a consequence of the crossing, so not sure that should have stood. But it's a good win. It's 5 points against a decent Northampton Saints side, who had to go for it, and they did go for it. But
gotta say, they're basically, much as I love the Saints at the moment, I just think that their performances are so underpowered. I mean, they have no fight in them. I don't know what it is. They just... Is it no fight? Is it they just can't defend, or they buckle? No idea.
The interesting thing is, their defence was really good for 90% of the time. And then, the only real bad defensive error was in the first 2 minutes for the Herring try. It was a nice bit of play, but it's 2 minutes into the game, so no one's out on their feet. No one should be out of position. And the inside man has just not picked up a run, like a blindside run from Robbie Herring. And he burst through three tackles.
Yeah.
That is poor.
Yeah, it is poor, isn't it? Yeah. Really poor. Like, on an individual basis, you look at their team and think, individually, they all seem to play fairly well in phases. So I think of, like, Ludlam, who I love, Tamon Harrison, who I love. You know, those sort of very...
Big Courts. Big Courts, but he doesn't play in phases.
We had this exact conversation last week, to be fair, didn't we?
But not... I'd exclude Courtney, because I think he is, like, legitimately world-class. He is just world-class. The other lads, I wonder if their middling talent or their top club talent just isn't not good enough.
Mm.
You know, like, so Ludlam can play at his highest level and he is good, and I really, really like him. But I would just, you know, maybe he's just not at the level that, you know, the back rows are at Sale or the back rows are at, you know, Leicester. Or
well, they went to Ulster and were really competitive. Well,
yeah, they were competitive. I think Ludlam's harsh to single him out, because he's
a hell of a... But Harrison would be in that mould.
Harrison, I'd agree with. I think
super abrasive, super hard-working, you know, very good players, but just not big enough or good enough.
Front row is where they do struggle.
Yeah. Front row, they struggle. Ribbons is really good.
Well, let's just remember, they've looked really good for the 7 or 8 weeks of the Premiership. They look genuinely really good. And they will look again. They will look great again, I think. February and beyond. This is the tough part of the season for Northampton, because the conditions don't play to their strengths.
And that is a good point.
I think they need probably a good 12 is someone that they need. Now, they've been playing Fraser Dingwall there. They've got Rory Hutchinson, who's been in and out, and it was amazing a few years ago, but his form has been a bit up and down. I think if they had, particularly when they lose Dan Bigger, and you've got Furbank, who's a solid 10, but not an amazing 10. I mean, he's an England international 10.
Yeah, exactly.
But England international 10 against Tonga, when, I mean, JB, you could have played 10 and you would have
I've done all right.
You would have done very well in that game.
I'd played 10 like what's his name? Not Billy. Like Billy Burns plays. Just give it to everybody else.
Who are you going to say? Manu Vunipola. Not Billy Vunipola.
Vunipola. Manu, just give it to everyone else. Rhys Priestland.
Yes.
I said I'd be less afraid of the game line.
Yes. So, yeah, I think that... Because I really like Proctor at 13, but we're not seeing him as much as we should be because he's such a dangerous runner. He's such a strong runner and dangerous runner.
I like Dingwall.
We're not bringing him into the game enough.
Yeah. I like them with Dingwall and Hutchinson. I also appreciate there's just no directness to what they do.
Yeah. Well, Hutchinson... Dingwall can hit hard. He hit... was it actually? I think it was Gilroy on Dingwall.
Is Gilroy in relation to the other Gilroy?
It's the same Gilroy.
As Craig Gilroy, they've got a second one, haven't they?
Have they?
I thought
they might do.
I'm sure they have. Have I made that up?
No, that's Coronation Street Bet Gilroy.
Ah, you're yes, thinking about. It is. quick look. I'm sure I noticed another Gilroy.
Maybe. Oh, while you're doing that,
I did
want to give a shout out actually because. Balakad Economics messages on Twitter to give a shout out to Ballymena Academy Rugby, who have supplied some impressive. There was 4 players on the pitch on Friday night from Ballymena Academy.
Wow!
And over the years, they've produced Ian Humphreys, Matt McCullough, Brian Young, Luke Marshall, Andy Warwick, John Andrew, Matty Ray, Marcus Ray, Stuart Moore, and also David Humphreys, James Topping, Sid Miller, and Willie John McBride. So
there's some big names there.
Some massive names over the year. And to have 4 players, for one club, to have 4 players on the pitch on Friday night in such a good win is very impressive.
Isn't it just?
Yeah.
Isn't it just? Yeah. Do you know, Ulster in particular, of all the Irish provinces, probably Premiership teams need to be looking at these guys now and saying, that's how you build a team. Giving lads opportunities, letting them... Letting them flourish and playing them for things that they can do rather than things that you hope that they are.
McFarland is he's such a good coach. He reminds me of Borthwick in the way that he's just so kind of straight-laced.
Yeah.
The way that he addresses the press and answers the question. He gives you a straight answer to a straight question. And he's built that team in a really nice way that plays to the strengths of that team. And doesn't try and copy other team styles, doesn't try and do anything different, is just a good solid team built around some very impressive youngsters.
He talks about love too, JB.
What?
Has he really? He's been doing that for a while.
Oh God.
And I've got so much time for Dan McFarland.
Massively.
I really do. He gets it. He just gets it.
Yeah.
He gets it from the fans' perspective. He's got a great relationship. He's cultivated a great relationship between the Ulster team and the fans. And, I think he's doing really, really good things.
With all that said, I think Ulster, if they get any of the big teams in a big game in the knockout stages, we're really going to struggle.
Yeah, agreed. Just on this one, it seems like the right time to bring it up. Ben in Leicester has emailed contacteggchasers@gmail.com. He says... boys, with the Irish teams looking so strong at the moment, he did message this on Friday before the matches.
Mm-hmm.
He said, with the Irish provinces looking so strong at the moment, do you think there's a space for a fifth province? So much depth in every position.
No.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how Ireland carves itself up geographically in terms of, like you say, these provinces are natural, already existing things. The rugby hasn't invented Leinster, Munster, Connacht, and all
that. I thought that. No. So I always thought that Wales was divided up into blues, scarlets, dragons. And I got confused. But I guess the fifth province then would be London Irish if they wanted to go down there.
Well, I mean, what's the population of New Zealand and population of Ireland is
comparable?
Comparable, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, but somewhere and between about 4 or 5 million.
There's 5 like New Zealand teams, and there's a north and a south.
I would say
kind of makes sense
that the more international rugby players that you get, and I know what you're saying, that there's so many now that they could have a fifth province, but why water it down? I do believe in steel sharpens steel. So the more world class guys that you get in there, I wouldn't be surprised if you reallocated the talent, if the Leinster players in different environments weren't as good as the Leinster players in Leinster's environment because they're up against it every single day.
Well, that is what Leinster did for a while. That's how Ulster recruited a lot of players when they were making their own.
Yeah,
We'll have Geordie Murphy. We'll have
Jack McGrath. Yeah, Carberry went to Munster.
Yeah. So I think they're probably in as good a place as they can be now.
Yeah, and it is. You get kind of ups and downs in terms of talent and the richness of the talent, and Ireland have got a lot of options and they've got depth. Like we've seen, we always see it from Leinster, but we've seen from Munster and Ulster.
Yeah.
They might not necessarily be in that position in a few years' time. And then if you're trying to play with more teams, never mind the difficulty of actually structuring the snake pit that would be negotiating the fifth team, where it's going to be, who it's going to be based on. It'd be horrible. But you might not be in that same team, same position with all of that rich talent, and therefore all five teams suffer as a consequence. Yeah.
Well, we got another email from Rory on the subject of Irish rugby, and it's mainly about the Leinster v Montpellier game. What do you think? Which we discussed, but he also does say, I was wondering if Phil could help me out. I'm looking to buy a coffee machine.
No,
what would he recommend? He says, I know he was talking about one recently on the pods, but I can't remember which one that was. You can't afford that. Well, if you can't afford that,
more fool
you. Well, you can't get one.
You can't
there are
get
none
one
available in the UK at the moment.
Well, I had to get mine from Italy.
Yeah. This you'll struggle to get one right now.
If you want a good bean to cup entry level barista, and someone came round to my house who has worked at a, they were doing a bit of, it doesn't really matter what the ins and outs were. Daughter of a friend doing some work experience with my wife on her business. She came in. She's worked at a cafe in Chorlton. She came and used my machine. And I said to Kate, I think maybe I need a more expensive machine to be able to do the real latte proper art. Latte art. Yeah.
No.
She just came in and went, whoop.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful fern.
I can't do latte art for the life of me.
But that's a Sage Barista Express. That's a good, solid, entry-level bean-to-cup machine. It's great.
I've had my Barista Express for 6 years now. Six and a half years now. I am looking at upgrading it, but it has been... I think it's a great balance in terms of your money.
You call it your best friend, do you not?
I did a few years ago. If I was looking at getting another one, which I am, but just not yet, I'd be going for... The two that I'm really interested in would be Prophetic Pro 700, which is about four times the price, and then a La Marcosa Linear Mini 2021 Fiorentina model.
9 or 10 times the price.
It's 10 times the price. It's probably, when you get a grinder as well, you're probably talking 12 times the price.
So this is the thing, Rory. Basically, spend get Sage Barista Express. It's not worth getting anything a little bit more expensive than that. If you're going to go more expensive than that, you need to double the price.
So what you can do as well is, you can buy that, if you like having, because it's not as easy as just making instant coffee, but it's a lot better.
If you like
the process, you can sell that for probably 50% of what you bought it for, and then upgrade in 12 months' time.
Hang on a minute.
Yeah.
There is another element to this. How do you like your coffee? What do you drink?
Mostly, when I'm at home, I drink double espressos, and then the occasional macchiato, and if I occasionally, on the weekend, push the boat out to a cappuccino.
What time?
Before 10:30 a.m.
Thank you.
I was going to say, I very much... follow the Italian model now, which is something with milk in the morning only, strictly, and then it's espresso.
Yeah. So the reason I mention that is because my machine upstairs does everything.
Yours is a Rocket.
Something or other. Matisse.
Begins with M.
It begins with M.
Yeah.
Yes. I have basically a double espresso plus a bit of water, right?
Yeah.
Now, I've got that machine upstairs, which is pretty good. But I've also got another one in my flat, which is a DeLonghi bean to cup thing.
So that is a like one button bean to cup.
One button, press it.
And it spits out coffee at the end of it.
Yeah. And the only things you control, right, is how much volume of liquid. And there's a tiny little thing on the grinder to control the... And actually, when you turn that up to the absolute finest grind... and turn it down to the minimum amount of liquid, you actually get exactly coffee as I like it for about one-fifth of the price.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
Yeah.
There you go.
But it is nice. The Rocket particular. The Sage Barista Express looks decent. The Rocket looks superb.
Yes.
And then the La Marcosa Linear Mini 2021 Fiorentina edition is next level beautiful.
Yeah, I like mine because of how cool people think I am for owning it.
So there you go. Hopefully that helped, Rory. And that's the Coffee with the Boys segment of the podcast done.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we'll launch into one of the other games through an email from Craig Simpson, contactdeadchasers@gmail.com. Hello, Tim, JB, and Phil. Love the podcast, blah, 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 blah. He says, I do occasionally get slightly frustrated at the general attitude towards the URC / Scottish teams due to the league they play in. Well, you might have a point here, mate, because he says, can you discuss Glasgow's last two European performances? Running last year's finalists very close and bullying, he uses that word, which I don't think is inappropriate, bullying the Exeter Chiefs this week. Combine this with Edinburgh beating a strong Saracens team away from home. I don't think the depth within Scottish rugby has been this strong for 20-plus years. For a country with less registered players than Sri Lanka.
Now, that was the interesting part of the email for me. We are not that bad.
Yeah, I didn't know Sri Lanka was a hotbed. And we got a separate email, actually, which I will find as you're discussing, from someone saying, in terms of a Tier 2 tour, Nick Goff, here he is, he's in Sri Lanka. And weirdly, the two separate emails, completely unrelated, but he was saying, you'd be surprised, Nick Goff, thanks for getting in touch, said you'd be surprised about the popularity of rugby in Sri Lanka. Come over for a Tier 2 tour.
Where is Sri Lanka?
The Indian subcontinent.
East of India.
Is Colombo still the... Colombo's the capital.
So, has it just not recently ended a civil war?
Yes, but I actually think that the everything I hear about Sri Lanka is wonderful. Like the locals absolutely love having people from Europe and the UK and stuff, and it's just gorgeous white sand, incredible jungle and beaches and wildlife.
Well, Sri Lanka, or Ceylon, as it was formerly called, they're one of the few teams that the British and Irish Lions have played against.
Yes, I'm aware.
Because in the 50s, I think it was, or maybe I'm just looking it up, 1930s and the 1950s, because they were obviously touring to Australia and New Zealand, by boat, they stopped off in Sri Lanka. Amazing. Or Ceylon. Yeah, so they played... October 1st, 1930, and 18th of September, 1950, at the racecourse in Colombo. I bet that would have been pretty cool to go to.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been unbelievable.
That would be amazing. Yeah, hey, thank you very much for the heads up, Nick, and we'll be sure to ask for some advice as and when things like that are able to do again, be game on. As to Craig's email, fair comment, I'd say, which is not something you say about teams playing Exeter very often. Glasgow bullied them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see it, actually. I know the weather conditions were dreadful.
You were watching it, but you just couldn't see what was going on.
But I was
saying nobody saw it.
Yeah, I hear the weather conditions were dreadful for both teams, though. So that's
They were. They were. No, Glasgow massively fronted up. They stopped Exeter on the gain line or behind the gain line repeatedly. It reminded me a bit of the... Scotland beat England 2 years ago, about 2019, at Twickenham, in very bad conditions, probably worse conditions than this. But England went to beat Scotland up, and Scotland just repeatedly stopped England on the gain line, time after time after time, in that Six Nations. It might have been 2020 Six Nations. This reminded me of that game. Glasgow, especially when you consider just how much talent has left Glasgow
amazing,
in the last few years.
It's amazing.
So just think of Hogg, Finn Russell, Hugh Jones, Duane van der Merwe. Duane was Edinburgh. But,
Great.
Yeah, great. Yeah, Johnny Gray.
So the way Seymour. I read this is that Glasgow's South Africans were far more effective than Exeter's Scottish players. Yeah, it's a cracking result. It's a bloody great result, and that puts Glasgow basically in the driver's seat to get out of the group now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and yeah, I think the point you make about the amount of talent which is lost, and I'll put my hand up and say I'm guilty of thinking of Glasgow now as a bit of a spent force because they have lost so much talent. But maybe I'm completely wrong.
I mean, we talk up the Premiership as a great spectacle all the time, and I think rightly so. The competitiveness first down to, well, the competitiveness through most of the league is there to see, and any team can beat any team, and that's the beauty of it. But I think that there's going to be, I have to be an acknowledgement that there's very much a difference between competitiveness and overall quality, and the Premiership is going to be significantly adrift from a lot of the Ultimate Fighting Championship clubs, and definitely the top 14.
I'm not sure. I think this just is an extension of what I've always said about European rugby. The beauty of it is watching teams who are built differently for different tasks. The UFC teams are built to provide the national teams with basically a babysitting service.
But when you get to the top teams, the coaching is excellent.
Brilliant.
The preparation is perfect. The tactical setup is great. And there are, appreciate this matchups, but it will come down to personnel. That will be the difference. Amazing players and enough of them will make the difference in big games, which is why I'm saying, and I'm not complaining about it because rugby's got to cut its cloth, but the Premiership in seasons to come, this is what we're going to see a little bit more because they're going to be limited by the.
So I'm not sure
by the salary.
I'm not sure if maybe that is the future of the game. I'm not sure if this game reflects that because Exeter have actually got two of Glasgow's best players, recent greats, Gray and Hogg. So the talent drain is still occurring. The Scottish teams are not doing a particularly great job of getting the talent back in. So they lost. I say Chalmers. What am I thinking about? The other guy who went to Gloucester.
Oh, Hastings.
Hastings. They lost Hastings and they signed Duncan Weir. So they're not retaining the talent that much.
But they don't need it if they've got Ross Thompson kicking sticks as he was doing yesterday.
If anything, this is a victory for Glasgow in the same way the victory for Ulster reflected that they're giving the talent within their system an opportunity to shine.
Yeah, so they've got a national setup which is highly concentrated.
Yeah.
In through two focal points.
Yeah,
and if you get the coaching and the preparation and everything else right, it's.
I don't even know who the coach of Glasgow is. Does anyone know who the coach of Glasgow is?
Danny Wilson.
From the ex Cardiff Blues guy?
I think so.
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah,
fair.
Is that not why Dai Young went to
Cardiff.
Yeah, so Danny Wilson would have. So did Danny Wilson have a history with Scottish rugby before that?
Don't know.
I don't know either. I'm so out of touch with UFC.
One thing I will say is Glasgow, so they kick their stick very well. Ross Thompson, cool head, slotting penalties. Exeter, now, I don't think they had that many shots at goal because I think Glasgow's discipline was generally very good. They didn't score a single penalty. Had they been able to keep the scoreboard ticking over in the same way that Glasgow did, they wouldn't have found themselves so far adrift.
And they didn't score a single point until 71 minutes.
Yeah.
Wow.
I do wonder, partly because of the law changes that we've already spoken about, so I won't go into that, but I do wonder if that will slightly reset Exeter's risk and reward from kicking the sticks compared to kicking the corner. So, something that we'll have to watch in future.
Good point.
The other one, Johnny Matthews, who scored the final try for Glasgow, Old Sedgley Park boy. So,
is he?
Yeah, he played a couple of seasons in my last couple of seasons.
I've got a story for you. So I interviewed Jack Singleton this week for Rugby Dungeon.
Jack Singleton. Oh yeah.
Yep. So that's up now. Go listen to that. And really, really good interview. Obviously,
and really good interviewee.
Yes, interviewee.
Yeah, yeah.
But afterwards, we're having a chat off mic. Okay, I can't believe it. This is off mic. And so, Is it your dad that played, or you know, how have you got going to it? He goes, no, it's my mum's side. They're from Manchester, and my uncle was one of the founding members of Sedgley Park. I was like, what? Why didn't you tell me that on the podcast?
Wow, like,
no, it's not a good interview. You missed some brilliant questions.
So that's interesting because there are singletons at Sedgley Park.
Well, it'd be his mum's side, so they wouldn't be singletons.
Oh, interesting. It's, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
There might be simpletons, not singletons.
God, yeah.
I'm joking.
Fancy them.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow.
I'll find out from him who...
So Sedgley Park's Jack Singleton. I wonder if him and Mark Atkinson are Bezzy mates off that. I wonder if their folks know each other.
Well, actually, Mark Atkinson... So Mark Atkinson's from... I think he's from Hale rather than anywhere else.
Yeah, he's a bit posher.
Yeah, a bit, you know, from the world's...
Much better stock.
Yeah. The reason I asked that is because Singleton... He really likes football. His dad's a Manchester United fan. I was like, well, what, are you from Manchester? He goes, no, North Manchester. But it's my mum's side that played.
I love it. Are you from Manchester? No, North Manchester.
Yeah, North Manchester.
I would never say... I am from North Manchester.
I think I might have said that. I don't... But it came about.
No one was...
I said that we're based in South Manchester.
Okay.
I'm from North Manchester.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense.
It does.
Yeah. No,
from Manchester. North.
Anyway, I said I'm from North Wales. Also,
you do.
Yeah.
Wales, you're quite particular.
North Wales. No, North Wales. North Wales.
You're quite particular about that.
Yeah. So there's an interesting...
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. One final game that we not touched on. Quinn's Cardiff.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Rowan.
Yeah, I mean,
look, Rowan Jenkins, friend of the pod,
did great. I'm sure. I'm over the novelty now. well done, everyone. It'd be nice if they won. I mean, but they were 17 all at one point.
Yeah, they were in it until last 20 minutes or so. They were right in it, and yeah. then there was a couple of tries, crossfield kick by March and Don Brandt. Crash over try, and that kind of finished it off with the Estes and try right, well, with 2 minutes to go when it's already done. But they played well. They scored a lovely try to start. Winnett, the fullback, scored a great try with Fish pulling the strings. Then both of them got the try pick and go, where they put loads of pressure on Quinns. And then I don't know who this kid is, Cabango, finished a try from 50 yards.
He's a very good runner.
Great runner, lovely balanced runner, rapid, and he had those guys covering him, but he had enough time and space and enough speed to kind of weave in between them.
Yeah, we had some official Egg Chasers players at the game.
We did.
Top scorer Hugo.
Hugo. And,
team manager Captain Lee.
Captain Lee.
And Alfie.
And Alfie, of course. So, most important member of the Egg Chasers.
Official Egg Chasers there.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, fine. I mean, you know, I understand why. You know, I understand what's going on. Why his team had to play. Good on them. The dream is now thoroughly over.
Yeah, they should still take some positives out of that because they played some good stuff.
Yeah.
But Quinns were all round too strong.
I would like to mention something else. Aberavon, which is where Rowan Jenkins is from, or the team he plays for. Have you seen their promotional video?
You sent it
it's
with...
So good.
I always get his name wrong. Sheen.
Is it Michael?
Is it? Yeah, Michael Sheen.
Is that
the actor?
Is that an actor, Tim? Michael Sheen?
Well, Michael Sheen's two actors, isn't it?
No, there's... there's Martin Sheen, who was the president in The West Wing.
Yeah, not him.
Yeah.
And then there's Michael Sheen, who was Frost in Frost Nixon.
Yes, and it is him.
Him.
Yeah, it's him. And he, the guy who now... says he's going to be a what was the phrase? A not-for-profit actor.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
And he's going to be carbon negative, isn't he? A not-for-profit.
I've got to say,
a load of bollocks.
Yeah. I mean, his hair was pretty wild on this thing, so maybe that's part of being carbon negative.
I love it when you make this is right. Okay, this is someone.
How have you been carbon
negative?
I've
made millions of pounds.
Yeah. Don't need to tell me about
now, I just need to cling on to my career. I'll say all the right things. I'm not making any money anymore. I just cover my costs. And what else did he say? And carbon negative.
He might not have said carbon negative, to be fair
neutral?
To him.
Carbon neutral. I'm a carbon neutral, not-for-profit actor.
It's astonishing. It's flawed. however, he did do a nice advert for Avon, presumably not for profit. And he just does this like monologue, and it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it is great. It is great.
You've ruined it for me now, telling me all the
that's fine. Two things can be true at once. That can be ridiculous, and the video can be awesome.
That is true. Two things can be true at once. It makes me bristle. Just thought of it.
So, how about we just meander through a couple more messages and see where it takes us? Will Kane says, watching a replay of Munster v Cast, which we haven't talked about.
Okay,
he spotted something that has been annoying him for a while, even at level 6 where he plays. The length of penalty advantages. In the 57th minute, Chris Farrell is taken out off the ball after he threw himself about to get the ref's attention. That's okay. 35-ish metres from the line, Matt Carley then played penalty advantage numerous phases until Munster eventually having a try-scoring opportunity in the corner. Carley then has a four-minute discussion with Tempest as to try or no try. But if it's no try, he's going back for the penalty. If 35 metres and a try-scoring opportunity isn't an advantage, then what is? Will,
good point.
I could not agree more. The way advantage is done infuriates me, and I'm with you.
That is because try-scoring opportunity should be the end of it. And I think that was for the O'Donoghue try, which was ultimately a try, even though it's quite similar to the D'Alande no try. Mm. Which was, I think, actually they got the ref. Carley got the decision right on both counts, but it would have been ludicrous to go back for the Chris Farrell penalty.
Two ways to look at it. First of all, it demonstrates exactly how powerful penalties are, because a try scoring opportunity, does that replace having my line out, 20 metres down the field? I don't know if it does actually. All the 3 points, because both of those are powerful outcomes. The second way to look at it is, it's one of the few times that teams truly play non-risk-averse rugby.
Yeah, yeah. They open up.
Yeah, so you have like a space of, I don't know, maybe 90 seconds where something might happen, which is very special, whether it be cross-field kick, grubber through. They put all their skills out on display. The counter to that, the third way to look at it is so demoralising for a defence. If you're playing, even at level 6, and then a penalty is called against you, you just know how hard you've got to work.
Mm.
And even after you've worked as hard as you possibly can, you might have to defend the line out, or you might have to defend... you can't defend, you just have to watch 3 points sail over. So it is demoralising, but...
I agree with you, and you're right about the risk, the risk-free rugby that it affords. But however, I think the attacking team should know that, and it's like, you've got a free shot, try something if you want to, try that cross-field kick, try the ridiculous offload that might not come off, because you've got the safety net of the penalty. If you choose to go phase, well, that's on you.
Yeah.
And to tie this in with something else that's been a bugbear for a while, and I've mentioned a bunch of times, it absolutely infuriates me. Even if it was only 5 metres back, the penalty, if there's times when a player is reaching to put the ball over the line and drops it, it's like, well, no. How much more advantage do you want than only having to have held the ball for another second to score a try? Advantage over.
And obviously what the phase is, right? But if my team style of play is to go through the phases, is it the team's fault that they're going through the phases, or is it the referee's fault for allowing them to go through the phases before blowing the advantage up?
Do
you see what I mean?
When I played, I can remember... referees chatting to scrum halves quite often. It's like, you've still got the penalty advantage, but, and quite often the scrum halves would just like deliberately knock it off.
Yeah.
We'll have the pen, please, sir.
Yeah.
There's sort of a bit of communication, but there's got to be a limit to it. And there's no hard and fast rules on this.
I feel there should be a limit to it as well. But then, if you feel that your advantage is your pick and go game and you're not particularly adept at cross field kicking, I don't think you should be punished by saying, okay, you've picked and gone now 3 times, advantage over, or if you do that again, advantage over.
It's no hard and fast rules.
Yeah.
The clear try scoring opportunity, that is a rule. Yeah. And if you have a clear try scoring opportunity and miss it through your own fault, you shouldn't then get to go back to the advantage.
Yeah, so if you... Okay, so with the crossfield kick then...
The crossfield kick's an interesting one.
That, to me, is a clear try scoring advantage, because it's a 1-1 now, or whatever it is, and the player knocks it on. We'll come back to the...
Yeah.
Advantage. I think actually, I like it. I think I'll keep it as it is. It's the least worst option, I think, the way it's played at the moment.
Generally, the way it's played at the moment. But that would have been, it would have been fairly unsatisfactory had that gone back for a Chris Farrell penalty. 35 yes. metres down the line and X number of phases.
Got to trust that the referee knows what he's doing. The art of refereeing.
Yeah, which is fair. And in fairness to, well, most of the referees, not all, but most referees, and particularly most of the English referees, they do know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're very, very good.
Agreed. Munster looked decent.
Yeah, it was a bit of a... Yeah. The first half in particular...
Hard to get excited about that particular fixture.
Yeah, the first half in particular was... Both teams were so stop and start.
Yeah, it was, the nature of the game was not great.
Yeah, not great conditions, mixed up teams. So yeah, it wasn't... That first half was tough watching, I must admit. Yeah. But another good win for Munster. Puts them up near the top and in contention going forward.
Here's an email I think you'll quite like. Ian Burbage says, as you've got a minute, lads, obviously with all the postponed games... Mm-hmm. As you don't have much European Cup content this week, I was wondering if you could help with something. My father-in-law doesn't follow rugby. We were having a broader conversation about how the game's changed over the years, and I was explaining the increased physicality over the past decade. Mm-hmm. He responded with, yeah, but surely they're all taking steroids. I suddenly realised that finding an answer was difficult, and despite following rugby fairly closely, knowing the odd person who's played bits for this club or that, and knowing people who've worked in rugby, I was struggling to defend the sport. I... strung something together about roids being used to sculpt ready for Love Island, not the Prem. What do you think about the subject? What should my response have been? How prevalent are performance-enhancing drugs? How good is testing? Is there an Amerta a la professional cycling? Does it matter? Ian from Worksworth. Obviously, with cycling, yeah, there's a sort of suggestion that everyone was at it. Everyone knew everyone was at it. Yeah. And so it was a level playing field.
My view on this is if there is doping in rugby... it's at a young age before there's any testing. That's what I think.
Players are randomly tested after games.
Sorry.
And in the week. And regularly.
Sorry, I mean like schoolboy level.
Yeah.
I think that's where...
I'm saying rugby at all levels, as I understand it, has random testing.
Yeah.
Above a certain level.
More so at professional level, obviously. But it definitely happens lower down the
There is no
ladder.
Story about it.
Yeah.
Amateur rugby players... there are loads and loads of people using performance enhancing drugs. And people say it's cheating or whatnot. I don't really have a problem with it at a lower level. You know, it's their health. They can do as they wish.
If having creatine made you massive, then I'd have a problem. But you still have to go and...
You still have to go and graft. A lot of these guys are doing it for us. It's just pure aesthetic reasons.
So, I think there's a tipping point. I think, say, below level 4... people would be taking it for aesthetic reasons.
Yeah.
So they can go and look good in the bar, on the beach, wherever.
Yeah.
I think above that level, there's probably still that happens a little bit, but anyone who does it is at least considering the performance enhancing. But I think it's far rarer, from what I've seen, it's far rarer at that higher level because you do get tested. Yeah. It's essentially playing in tiers 2, 3 and 4. We would get tested. It would only happen... 2 or 3 times a season. But
it needs to happen once, doesn't it?
I played with a lad. A really nice bloke.
Was he a pro?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Just get his car and drive off. Is that the one?
No. It's so stupid. 135 kg prop. Was going to Marbella in the summer.
Yes.
It's about 2 months before he was going to Marbella. And he'd taken some fat strippers to lose a bit of timber because he wanted to look good in Marbella. Yeah. He'd taken them on like the Tuesday... He wasn't going through a course with him. He wasn't doing anything. There'd be no performance enhancing benefit. He got singled out on the Saturday. He got tested. He got a 2-year ban.
See, I have no problem with that. And I would have him back in the team tomorrow.
And he did. He came back and played. After 2 years, he came back and played.
Yeah, I think there's a moral panic about this. And I do get the top end of performance enhancing drugs, like you see in cycling or athletics, that's really sinister stuff. And lower down the leagues, I don't really care what you do.
One part of me is fascinated to know what a Tua Lange would look like with the addition of performance enhancing drugs. That'd be frightening. But obviously, no, I actually agree with Phil. It will hardly ever happen because the threat is there and the whilst the incentives...
The shame.
Whilst the incentives are there to try and, you know, it can be worth a few quid to be that couple of percent better, equally, the incentive of being found out is sufficient that it will largely not happen. I agree, there probably is an issue at the amateur level.
And I think there probably is an issue at youth level in certain environments.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Schoolboy rugby, particularly in some of like the... I guess this is anecdotal, but in the UK private schools and some of the big rugby playing schools in, say, South Africa or New Zealand, I suspect there will be a lot of that because it is...
I agree.
It's the kind of thing where... And there was a picture... I'm not pointing fingers at anything, but there was an interesting picture that came up of Duane van der Merwe about 6 months ago,
yes,
as a 17-year-old, not looking like a 17-year-old.
Oh, God, who is now, really didn't, did he?
Who is now earning 400-500K as a consequence of being incredibly
and those gains
tall
stay,
and strong and fast.
Those gains stay with you for, well, forever, don't they?
Well, look at Justin Gatlin or Dwayne Chambers. Justin Gatlin was running like sub 10 seconds at 37.
How old am I? anyway, yeah, go on. Carry on.
So yeah, the gains do definitely stay with you. And that's where a schoolboy rugby, the high end of schoolboy rugby, the reward is potentially, the long-term reward is so great and the risk is so low that it is pushed in the other way.
Come on, we've watched enough Hollywood films. Get a fake piece,
yeah,
with a little someone else's urine inside it.
Perfect.
For when you're called upon.
I can't think of anything better.
I've been at clubs, when I played at Newbury and Manchester, there were players who were tested. I was never one of the players that was tested. I could have juiced up my whole career. I would have got away with it. But what do they do when you do get tested? Do they stand there while you piss?
Yeah. Yeah, they take you into the room and there's a doctor and another, and they have to watch you. They have to watch you midstream.
I imagine some of the people that message JB's DM inbox apply for those gigs.
Yeah, it's the dream job for someone, isn't it?
When you say they have to watch you midstream, what do you mean?
Watch you have a piss.
Oh, no, they don't just stand there while you're in the room. They have to inspect
I think
that you don't have a prosthetic piece.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, make sure. Yeah.
I was just thinking about this now. Just literally, this is just my.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, me think he doth protest too much. I've just thought about it. First time I've ever thought of this. Honest.
No, like if you're cheating, performance on drugs. Say you're a level 9 player, right, or a level 8 player, or something like that. And you think, right, I'm going to get on a course of steroids. Yeah. Like your whole team, it's cheating. As in, you're going to be a much better player. But I don't think it's cheating in the same...
Are you going to be much better player?
You're not, are you? Because I've played against loads of massive blokes who are terrible.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, yeah,
I don't actually think...
You'll put back on a bit more muscle, you might get a bit stronger and a bit faster.
Yeah,
you're training and your juicing are both on point.
But you might get to, what, not very high level, like level 6? Level 8 to level 6?
Yeah, yeah.
In which case, you've got better as an individual, but you've just found a club where you can play to that potential.
Yeah.
If you are an absolute top athlete and then you're adding another 10% to it, you know, the whole Gloucester team are juicing up, well then, you know, that's very, very different.
Yeah.
And I do not think there's any evidence at all to suggest that. I think rugby is actually very, very clean. Very clean.
I might start watching Friday Night Lights again just to follow that Smash Williams storyline.
Was Smash juicing?
At one point, yeah.
Was he?
Because everyone was telling him he was too small. To make it as a running back in the NFL.
I'd be in his ear saying, "You've got Smash, you've got to get bigger, mate.
Take this.
Yeah,
take this, Smash.
Take it." So the answer is I don't think anything that sinister has happened.
No, I agree.
No.
I agree. So, yeah, you can tell your father-in-law there's lots and lots of testing in rugby union, and there are cases of people being banned for very long periods of time, 2 years, 4 years.
Yeah.
And there have been...
Two years for the chap I played with was a... Did it seemed overkill? That really did. I've played against other guys who have been banned for proper performance. And there was one at Manchester, a chap called Marshall Gadd, who I think he went on to play at Rotherham. It was another prop, but I think he was on. I think he was on the same gear that Ben Johnson was on. Got caught with.
Wow, was he quick?
Not so sure. But yeah, there is. That is good guys playing top couple of divisions and doing it to make themselves better and probably doing it to have a shot at playing at higher levels as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably when you're going to do it, isn't it? When you're lower levels trying to get into the higher levels.
Yeah.
But I just one last thing on this. Do not underestimate how good the S&C is at these clubs. And
oh,
how
yeah.
much can get done with a brilliant diet, being fed properly, working out properly. And I can understand why, if you look at these guys and compare them to, say, the England team of the mid-80s, you think, yeah, they're all juicing. But they're not. They're just the sports science involved is just so good.
And what steroids enable you to do is to recover faster so you can do more workload. But the, like you say, these players, this is all they do. It's not like the amateur rugby player who's a doorman and who's juicing. That this is someone, all they do, dedicate themselves to their body and to training.
Yes.
I agree. Yeah. One email, this might be a sort of good one to finish before we preview next weekend's games, is from Gavin Doyle.
Gavin.
Veteran of two Tier 2 tours.
Gavin.
Voice of an angel.
Mm. Yes.
Multilinguist.
Yep.
And a great drinker as well.
Yes.
And Gavin says, hi Tim, JB and Phil. Firstly, I'd like to wish you all a happy Christmas or Feliz Navidad, as we say in this neck of the woods.
Noted.
I'm emailing you. Very 20th century, I know. I'd like to discuss the underhand shenanigans currently going on at EPCR. So this is looping back round to what we talked about earlier. However, it launches on forwards. He says, I feel Leinster, along with our Welsh counterparts, the Ospreys, Scarlets and Cardiff, have all been well and truly shafted by the authorities that run European club rugby. Leinster did everything asked of them, nominated 23 COVID-free players, had gotten tested repeatedly, had been given the green light from the Irish health authorities to travel to France and were ready to fly, when they were slapped with a 28-0 and 5-point loss to Montpellier, who themselves had cases of COVID in the week. Important context, which we didn't mention earlier, Gavin, you're quite right. No chance of a postponement, they were told. Take your medicine, even though there are no COVID travel restrictions between the France and Ireland, and only between France and the UK. And yet, hey presto, 24 hours later, the Anglo-French fixtures postponed. No punishments, no walkovers, no equity. I'm not looking for special treatment for Irish or Welsh clubs, just fairness.
Yeah. I think those games that are postponed will turn into walkovers, and therefore no one will have any problems.
But I don't think they can be walkovers, because it's not a walkover is when one side has sufficient cases and the other side does not, therefore it's 28-0. So the only thing they could do would give it like a 14-0 draw or something like that.
Yeah, you're right.
So you can't give a walkover in that situation.
It's a real mess, and it's gonna
And Leinster, and as Gavin rightly mentions, the Welsh provinces, Leinster particular, I think, have been really... It just, looking back on it, it seems so harsh. And you can understand the decisions as they played out, one after the other, but it does seem the fair thing to do would almost be whatever solution you get for the games that are currently postponed rather than walkovers, you should apply to the other games. Particularly as Leinster were ready to travel. They had a full and fit squad.
Yeah.
At 23, and it was... I think I saw it. It was... there were some younger guys in there, but it's still a bloody strong squad, and I'd still back them to get something out of going to Montpellier.
So he makes the point that there was palpable anger when he was speaking to his friends back home in Dublin. He says that we were never on board. I think he's sort of saying he and the people he speaks to, never on board with the changes made to the old Heineken Cup, and fully believe the European Cup final should be the culmination of the European club rugby season and not serve as an appetizer to the Gallagher Premiership or top 14 knockout rounds. I actually agree with that, and I've forgotten about that. It should be Premiership final first, European Cup final after that.
Right. Completely agree.
Totally right. You're absolutely completely right. Agree. And he says, what I suggest is that in the new year, all 24 teams, or maybe even all 32, if we include the best from the Challenge Cup, are put into a draw for a straight FA Cup-style knockout competition in spring 2022. Those who won their games to date could get home draws. Less games, no dead rubbers, more excitement. I doubt that's how this decision by EPCR... I doubt that how this decision by EPCR has gone down in the Celtic fringe will gain much traction in the sports pages in England, let alone in France. But in the eastern province of Ireland, at least, the frustration is real.
Mm.
See you boys for the Tier 2 tour trip next week. Next year, let the boys play.
I'd be keen for that, given that you're going to have... Well, more than half the fixtures this week were disrupted, and it's likely to be the same in January. Truth be told, we're likely to be in a similar position to this in January. So you're going to have a totally disrupted group stage. I'd be all up for that. Have straight knockout. 32
down to 16, down to 8, down to 4, down to 2. That's five games. Yeah, just find a way to get it done.
You could actually do it if you made that decision now and say, well, the January games.
It's a great show. Well, I think that's part of Gavin's thinking. Yeah. Same number of rounds.
Just do it. It'd be far more exciting.
Do it.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Well, come on, let's...
Gavin nailed it.
Yeah, let's not pretend that the rugby authorities like to do sensible things. Hey,
heard it here first.
Before we watch or review next week's games, I want you to watch this with the sound on. I think that you're going to enjoy it. And just describe what you're seeing.
I'm looking at a man at the cricket in Australia.
Oh, God.
Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Taking pints. He's got two pints in his hand, one in his left, one in his right. He's walking the crowd. He's walking backwards now, slowly. Now he's walking fast backwards, putting it back down. He's downing the pint, left hand. Good lad. I've done, not that quick, but solid.
This video, I don't know why, it fills me with joy.
That's two he's drunk, and he's got one left, which he's taking back to his friends. Now he's walking off, and now he's walking backwards a step. Backwards a step, backwards a step, backwards a step. He's not going to take it to his friend. He's got it in his left hand, and he downs the third pint. So he got in a round, and the crowd around him managed to coax him into downing all three pints. And then they celebrate by bundling him. That's awesome. That is awesome.
I've seen a different one. Where the guy does two pints and then falls hard.
Oh, no. This instigates a massive party.
He does three and then it's a massive rave in the stand.
I'll send you send me that one. I'll send you the one I've got. I'll have a look at that later.
Also, in the last week, I passed the... It's now 7 years that I've held the world record for downing a pint.
Nice. There
you go. Remember Jim and Goody speaking a big game about their about downing drinks?
Yeah. No chance.
No chance. Good luck, boys.
Yeah. Right. What we got next week?
Well, just one thing to mention, because obviously Gavin has been on two tours, and he mentioned it. The fixtures are out.
Are they? Please tell us.
Fixtures are out. So Portugal only... So I quite fancy Lisbon. Portugal have two home games, 26th of February against Netherlands, and the 19th of March in Lisbon against Russia. So that 19th of March is definitely a possibility.
Okay.
The alternative would be Spain against Portugal in Madrid.
Yes! Yes!
The week before the 13th of March. So let's just...
What is the Super Saturday weekend? Because it's always worth seeing what the fixtures are for that.
Let's have a quick look.
The Rugby Europe Championship. We're still taking all the recommendations from people in America, from people in Sri Lanka.
Mm, yeah.
Europe might be more achievable.
Well, particularly in the short Madrid. Term. Madrid's fairly, it's not as COVID nutty as everywhere else.
Yeah.
The mayor of Madrid seems sensible.
You're right.
She, isn't it?
She, yeah.
So the 19th, the last weekend, which is would be in Lisbon.
19th of March.
19th of March. That is Super Saturday. Although the annoying thing is the Portugal game is the same time kickoff. It's kind of halfway. We'd miss most of Wales, Italy, and most of Ireland, Scotland. But then we'd be able to see France, England. That's an option.
It's not ideal.
The week before...
The Wales, Italy is not so bad missing, but the other two,
The 13th, I assume that's a Sunday. So the weekend before, I think...
That's the 13th, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, the 13th. So Spain, Portugal is on the Sunday, the 13th. In Madrid, the Six Nations proper games are on the Friday and the Saturday. So there's no clash there.
No clash on the Sunday.
So that's an option.
Friday. So the Friday night game in Madrid, two games on the Saturday.
Yeah. So Friday night game, which would be Wales, France, then England, Italy, Scotland, and England, Ireland on the Saturday.
Oh, that sounds good.
Then we could do. Spain, Portugal, which is a 12:45 early kickoff on the Sunday.
That works.
So either of those two, we could.
That sounds good.
We'll take this away and have a little chat about it.
You want to fly on the Monday, so you get another night in Madrid.
Definitely.
Well, you'd have to with the Sunday. You'd Portugal, Spain. I'm not flying after the rugby.
You'd have to.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yes. Ooh, so we've got
that
two.
Is interesting.
That's two good options. I do fancy Lisbon, but we've got two good options there.
Yeah. Well, let's look into it. It would be good to spread to somewhere new.
Do you know what? I'm really excited to see what the Dutch can do with the line out though.
Because they're one of the tallest nations on
exactly.
Earth.
Where do Portugal play? Is it somewhere near Lisbon city centre?
It's the Estadio Nacionale, known as the National Stadium Sports Complex in Lisbon. Let's have a look at where that
sounds pretty centralish.
This map is probably going to be no good, is it?
That'll be a well attended and tight game. That. Spain-Portugal.
Spain-Portugal would be pretty tasty. Yeah, I'm sure it's very close.
Yeah, it will be. It's fine.
We'll figure all this out.
Going somewhere new would be good as well.
It would be good to go somewhere new.
What are the other teams in the...
Madrid is a true world city.
Rugby Europe Championship.
So we have the usual Georgia, Russia, Portugal, Spain, Romania and Netherlands are in there ahead of Belgium or Germany.
Georgia, Russia in Tbilisi as well really appeals, but...
No, it does not. I'm never going east ever again. I mean, I don't mind going far east, but there's a big chunk of the world I'm never going... I don't see any point in going sort of east of Germany, really.
Tbilisi. Tbilisi's far enough east.
Not interested.
I fancy Tbilisi.
Some of the guys from BT Sport behind the scenes and stuff who worked in Tbilisi for the World Under 20 Championship said it was a load of fun.
I'm sure.
Such good fun.
No, it's too dangerous. Not going.
It does look a little bit out of the city centre. The Estadio Nacional.
We'll have to look into all the logistics.
Yes, but
so
we'll make
what
it.
Are the teams? So Georgia, Russia, Spain, Portugal, Romania,
Netherlands. So Amsterdam have got Netherlands. So they've got those last two weekends. Well, they travel to Russia, so we're not doing that. But they do host Romania in Amsterdam. So,
Romania in Amsterdam?
Mm,
I mean...
That might be quite fun.
That might be quite fun.
Yeah.
Never been to Amsterdam.
No, me neither.
Nor me.
Great canals.
I've only been through Amsterdam. Been to the airport, the Schiphol airport a couple of times. It's connecting flights, but that's it.
It's a big beast, isn't it? Big airport. Right, next week's fixtures.
I'm actually at a time when it feels like the world's shrinking down and we're all getting shut inside our little shell, it's just wonderful to think about the potential of spreading our rugby wings.
Do you know what, mate? We won't have the carbon budget to go by the time the Institute
Our allowance will have been used up on that steak we had last week.
Right.
Premiership.
Or we'll have to plug our an exercise bike. That's what we'll do. What are those? Oh, we'll have to plug a Peloton bike into the mains and earn enough credits back.
I would do you know if that was the case, I'd power my Peloton bike with a diesel generator. that's what I'd be doing. So I was supposed to go. What, everything's on a Sunday, but of course it is because it's Boxing Day, isn't it? And then it goes through to Monday.
Yeah. Yes. So there is actually one game on Friday, which is not a Premiership game, but in the UFC. Zebre host Benetton. 1 o'clock.
Benetton.
1 o'clock on Friday.
Wonderful. Bristol Leicester. Perfect. I don't know. I do know. Leicester.
Leicester.
Absolutely smash them.
Leicester going to crunch them.
But
yeah.
I don't think Leicester is a team that smash people. They grind.
Leicester have rested up guys like Genge.
And Ford.
And Ford.
I wouldn't play Genge. I don't know.
I would.
Why do you think I don't know how his...
I'd play him. Because if you don't play him, you're making it into a bigger deal than it should be.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. You play him.
Yeah. And Leicester have had they've kept winning, but they've rested up a few key men, and they will win the Genge Bowl.
Yes. Newcastle hosting Sale.
King of the North.
good fixture for Boxing Day.
Yeah, it's a good Boxing Day fixture, this. I think Newcastle sneak this.
I think Sale sneak this. The Ferns Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, Sale.
The Genge Bowl, the Ferns Bowl.
Sale are not playing particularly well. They're really physical. And do you know who can deal with physical teams really well? Newcastle. They just know what they're doing. I actually think that Newcastle, their organisation at the moment, is just a little bit better.
Sale, they must travel up. Do you think they'll travel up late on Christmas Day? Or do the whole thing on Boxing Day.
Boxing Day. I think they'll do an early start on Boxing Day.
Stop at a hotel outside,
get some breakfast, have a little walk around.
Like 6 a.m. start.
Get masseuses on.
Yeah, because there'll be no one on the road. You can be up there in 2.5-3 hours.
Yeah.
Maybe not if you're in a coach. Three to four hours.
I remember this every year, because obviously...
Just take horse.
Mm. So fly up. United flew to Leicester.
Yeah. So from the age of, 18, 19 to 36, basically, Nick was a professional rugby player.
Mm.
So I remember this. I mean, there's a lot of great things about being a professional athlete. Christmas is one of the awful times to be a professional athlete. Yeah, it is brutal.
To be playing, and they've crammed the games in as well, because biggest gates.
They've really thought this through. I'm sure they have. No, it's a premiership. They've not thought anything through. This is an accident.
Next one.
Saracens-Worcester. Saracens.
Less great game. But then,
this is a good one. This is an absolute belter. Wasps-London Irish. This will be the highest scoring game of the weekend.
Oh, that's a great game.
This will be a great game. It'll be great fun.
Irish come out on top.
Whoa.
Now, when they come out on top...
Is it at Wasps?
Yeah, I mean, look, they are 5 points off top four now.
Yeah, I think I might agree with you, only because of the injuries Wasps have got. And they've got a lot.
Yeah, Wasps will score some points. They'll be fun to watch. Irish are going to wipe the floor with them.
Yeah, I think I agree. Irish to win.
And now this is the one I'm really looking forward to.
I think this is the one I'm working at.
Are you?
Nice.
Hang on. What day is this going down?
This is on Sunday, Boxing Day.
I'd love to go to this game.
Bath Gloucester, is that what you're talking about?
Bath Gloucester. Gloucester to go to Bath.
That's the second game on BT Sport. First one is, I think, Bristol Leicester, and then it's Bath.
I don't know why I think this. I think Bath are going to win their first game of the season on Boxing Day against Gloucester in the rack.
I don't think so. Gloucester are too well drilled. Their line-out's too good. Their driving ball's too good.
I know. Everything. I would always pick Gloucester. But for some reason, I just think Bath are going to... They've had a week off, effectively, because of Europe.
Yeah.
I think they could do something here.
Boost from a new coach being announced.
Yeah. And they're at the Rec, and it's Boxing Day, and it's Gloucester.
It'll be packed out. Rec will be packed.
Let's see what the teams say. Let's see what the team selection is. But my initial thought is Bath. Whether I'll be brave enough to back it with my money, I don't know.
I think it's going to be really tight, this one. I'm so looking forward to it.
Give me Gloucester.
You'd probably have to say at this point, before the teams announce, Gloucester sneaking it.
And then on the Monday, we've got at the Stoop, Harlequins hosting Northampton Saints. A game that we've been invited to.
Have we?
Yeah.
Big game 13.
Oh, right.
Yes.
I miss big game 8.
Yeah. It was always the best one, wasn't it?
Always the best one, because it sounded like big game 8.
It was the 8th big game. Yeah. I really do. When they started out with big game 1, and they didn't think ahead, I do like it. Big and they probably 7, got to like big game 5, and they're like, oh no, what have we done? What do we do?
If you were ever going to get a total endorsement from J&B on Rainbow Laces weekend, it would have been Big Game 8.
Yeah. Big Game 8, perfect game to go for it.
Yeah, I always thought it was 8 because it's the 8th round of the Premiership. Of course it's not, is it?
No.
So, oh, it just happened to be the 8th round of the Premiership when they did it. On that particular occasion, Big Game 8.
Was round 8.
Yeah, I would quite like to see. Do I get on something for that? Maybe.
Might have too much. I need to float it. I need to float the idea. Yeah. I'd quite like to do it if I can make it work.
I would like to do it as well, but... We'll see. Seeing Harlequins would be fun.
See, Northampton, that'd be a fun game.
Really fun game.
Exciting open game.
Harlequins to win, though. Do we all agree?
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely Harlequins to win. Oh, here's one thing. Did either of you see the yellow card for Josh Adams? The tackle on Tyrone Green?
No.
It's caused a bit of a stir. So we've got a yellow card. Some people are saying it should be a red card.
How are you not across this if it caused a bit of a stir, JB?
I've just been disconnected from rugby really this week. Why did I miss the Harlequins game? No, my sister got engaged. That's why we had an engagement party.
Oh, nice. So,
oh, yes. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Indeed.
So, what's your brother-in-law to be like?
He's good.
You're building a boat with him, aren't you?
Yeah, we come in a boat.
Oh, there you go. That's all right, then.
It's all right.
Well, that's probably even, like... Actually, marriages come, marriages go.
A boat
is a proper commitment.
Yeah.
Exactly. In fact, exactly. I think your sister should be celebrating your union your union of boat ownership with you and her husband.
To be fair to him, he's not got an easy job. She's got three older brothers, all very protective. And he's done all right.
Good lad.
Yeah, the Josh Adams tackle on Tyrone Green. Some people saying red card. Some people saying nothing at all. I'm probably certainly more towards the nothing at all spectrum. But it was a very unusual incident. So, ball goes out wide, Quinn's attacking, and Tyrone Green has really nice fast hands. You think he's going to get nailed man and ball. He gets the ball away, and Josh Adam tries to smash him, but he's already got the ball away. So Tyrone Green kind of half pulls out and half... I don't think he jumps into it, but he's like kind of bouncing along because he's running. And Josh Adam hits him as he's in an upward bounce. And he flips over Josh Adams' head and lands, fortunately, on his back, and he's absolutely fine, he bounces up. But it was given as a yellow card. And from one of the angles, it looks like there's... Well, there is no wrap from Josh Adams, but there's an attempted wrap. He puts his arm out. But it's just this weird incident where you see the whole spectrum of reaction from people, from red card to nothing at all, play on, let the boys play. I just wanted to get your take on it, but because mine was more, I think Tyrone Green doesn't prepare for the hit because he's already got the ball away, and that means that he kind of he's in the air, not as a consequence of jumping, but because he's off balance because he's got the ball away, and then spins, and it looks horrific, but it's not. I don't think it's a bad thing from either side. I don't think either of them have done anything wrong with it.
Unfortunately, really. When you're searching for it, Josh Adams has just scored a touchdown, I think, for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh no, the worst time.
So,
see if I can find it now.
Tyrone Green. Let me try that one instead. Who's doing the cook? Anyone cooking the Christmas day? Anyone?
I'm doing something very similar to you, Tim. I've got a rib of beef.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what I'm going to cook prior to. On Christmas Eve, which I don't know yet.
There you go, I've got it.
Do you have gammon?
I've got it.
Excuse me, you don't want to go... sorry, Phil, important conversation.
Yes.
We'll get back to that. You don't want to do something heavy on Christmas Eve, because you've got a lot. I always think fish on a Christmas Eve is quite a good one.
That is a good shout.
Only fish and chips can get very heavy.
It can do.
Yeah.
I can do. What are we doing on Christmas Eve? I can't even remember
what you're doing. A ham.
Oh, yes, that's right, we're doing a ham. I'm doing a ham. With Dauphinoise potatoes.
Nice.
Oh, so that is quite heavy.
That is quite heavy now you say it.
The two of them together.
Small portion.
Yeah, ham and chips would be awesome. Ham and chips.
Ham, egg and chips. Now you're talking.
And also, I get my protein in, so I'll do my CrossFit. I hope I get... I'm a bit worried that the gym's going to shut down over Christmas. What am I going to do?
Well, mate...
You can get a workout with me in the gym.
There will be CrossFit gyms in Manchester who defy any... closures, trust me.
I think I know of one which I might have to join, because mine will not be defying any closures.
Yes, I know. I think I know of one that will defy all.
Take my money. Take it
yes,
all.
Yes, exactly. And also, yeah, the Christmas Eve workouts are... usually, CrossFit gyms do the 12 days of Christmas, so it'll be like...
Did it the other day. Brutal.
Did you?
Brutal.
Yeah, absolutely brutal workout.
What's the 12 days of Christmas?
So the first exercise is whatever it is, and you do one rep.
Yeah.
And then you do... that same rep and two of the next exercise. Then you go back and do one deadlift, two pull-ups, three
box jumps,
one and then one deadlift, two pull-ups, three box jumps, four burpees.
It's a good workout. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, whatever it is, it's really good. It's hard.
Nice.
I think I did that on.
If you do that and then sew your socks afterwards, you'll get 200
points
easy.
So, onlyfans.com/JB Egg Chaser.
Anyway, yeah, fine.
Let's see Tyrone Green.
Here's the Josh Adams tackle. So, this is a 30-second clip. I've not seen this. So, this, I think you'll get a very quick snapshot, because I think that's Tyrone Green. Yeah. Ball's about to be passed to him, but it's 30 seconds, so we'll get a replay.
Okay. So, instant hit. Tackles him around the waist.
Around the waist. Here we go again. Gives it very quickly. Can't see much from there. This might be a better angle. Quick pass.
Let the boys play.
I don't know.
He goes low. He's bent at the waist.
Can Josh Adams do?
The only problem is he doesn't really wrap that arm. He's a bit of a chicken wing. That is the only problem with it.
That is the only thing.
Yeah.
But if Tyrone Green doesn't jump, then he does wrap. And he does complete the tackle.
Incredibly, I'm okay with red card or nothing. Jesus.
If you jump, there's nothing to wrap.
He goes, it's the bit of the chicken wing.
It's awesome. Tyrone Green's okay, right?
He's absolutely fine. Yeah, right. Played on.
In which case, love it.
Do you know, though, he might not have been. And I know that's like a consequence thing, but look at that when he's upside down.
But how much of him not being okay is down to Josh Adams? How much is him jumping? Because Josh Adams, the only illegal thing, or the only questionable legality is, did he wrap?
He did not wrap, and something dangerous occurred afterwards, and that's a problem. Red card me. He did not wrap.
I wouldn't go red card, because he doesn't land on his head. Definitely not red card.
But only because he's lucky.
Because he rotates too much.
Yeah.
He over-rotates.
He is lucky there not to get really...
Accidents happen.
Yeah.
That is true.
And the fact that Tyrone Green bounced up, got on and jogged away.
Was it red card or yellow card?
Yellow. He's given yellow. I'm fine with the yellow. If he wraps, if Geoff Adam wraps there...
Well, I don't think he falls over.
Let the boys play. Because he can grab him more. So.
So more importantly...
Interesting one anyway.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
12 days of barbell Christmas, right?
Yeah.
On your last round would be one deadlift, 2 hand cleans, 3 front squats, 4 strict shoulder press, 5 back squats, 6 push press, 7 thrusters, 8 squat cleans, 9 split jerks, 10 power snatch, 11 overhead squats, and 12... what the hell is that? STHP?
Standing deadlift high pull.
Oh, yeah.
So is that all on the same weight?
Yes.
More like 40, 50 kg, something like that.
Yeah, it's a tiny weight. It's like a 35 kg weight. It's just a lot of reps. Did mine in 31 minutes.
Very good.
Very nice.
Beast.
Just, you can't let these Twitter DMs go to your head, mate. And on that bombshell, if you want to negotiate on... used socks with JB. He's at JB Moore on Twitter. We're at Rugby Podcast. Phil and me are lurking. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com with all your emails. Patreon.com/eggchasers. There will be festive content coming your way in your feed soon, so hit subscribe wherever you get yours. And let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.